Bus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. For the ninth time all time, Ohio State football is number one in the Associated Press preseason top 25. Buckeyes received 40 of the 69 first-place votes to take the top spot for the first time since 2015. The Oregon Ducks got 14 first-place votes. They'll begin the year number two, followed by Notre Dame, Georgia, Texas, and number six, Indiana. First time in 65 years, the Big Ten's going to begin number one and number two. Buckeyes will host Oregon November 7th. OSU's 18 days out from their season opener Saturday, September 5th against Ball State. Some bad news for the Texas Longhorns as left tackle Trevor Goosby injured his knee yesterday at practice. Steve Sarkisian says they'll know more this morning. Ohio State's at Texas on September 12th. And in baseball Monday, the Reds split a doubleheader with the Cardinals. This update is sponsored by Roosters. Roosters is giving away 12 ultimate Buckeye experiences. We're talking tickets, sideline passes, and trips to a Buckeye first-round postseason game. Register today and every day at roosterswings.com.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Tom Tiberi here.
Well, Reese came in, and he's handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then
it's a rundown.
And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me.
Oh,
I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
And so live on a Tuesday edition of the program, Bo and the Boys with you for the next three. The AP ballot is out. The Buckeyes are atop that. You can bet that we'll spend a little bit of time on that. 10 o'clock, we hit you with the real truth. 10:30, Uncle Dom drops by, as is customary, on a Tuesday. Two-a-days roll on the 11 o'clock hour. We close out the NFC West with a look at the 49ers and the Seahawks. Robert Turbin, former Super Bowl champion with the Seahawks, will join us to break down the Seahawks' chances at repeating coming up at 11:30. Well, today was it. Today was first day of school. It was first day of school. So the emotions were wide-ranging from the most innocent and pure and heartfelt. My wife, who was incredibly pretty emotional about all of it, incredibly organized, but got everything locked in, made sure that everybody was kind of doing all the things that they're supposed to do, which she's as good at as anybody walking the planet. It ranged from indifferent, NBC, I now have a high schooler, so this is new. He did feel like, because he had been in football stuff like all summer and in football practice for already a month, he already said he kind of felt like a freshman already. So I think football helps in that. I think fall sports in general, if you're a freshman, help a ton, because you're basically walking in knowing everybody. But he's going from a world, and this is not the way that I grew up in any way, shape, or form, but he is going from a world where he has spent the first 8 years, I guess nine years of his education, almost entirely isolated with kids his own grade. So that's the way they do it in our school. So like in middle school, the sixth graders almost never see the seventh graders in the halls even. They're on a different floor and they almost never see each other. To now, he's in with grown men, like 18-year-old people. So we'll see how all of that goes on his first day. Beamsy was epileptic. I mean, he was a broken man. He had no interest in going, could not go to sleep last night. He like tried to get all of his entire last day of summer in all in one day. He went to our club, which is closed on Mondays, and walked six holes by himself. Just wanted to go by himself and play golf on his last day of summer. So that's what he did. He played six holes by himself. He has not been in the hot tub all summer. Was in the hot tub for like an hour last night on a floaty. Like, I don't know what the hell's going on. But he was like trying to soak in all of summer in the final day. But I think he was okay by the time we finally went. Bootsy was pretty jacked up. He was pretty ready to go. At the same time, I think it hit him when I went and woke him up that this is all real now and we got to get up a little bit. I would ask you this. Do you look back fondly on your first day of school?
No.
No.
No, it always felt like a sentence.
God.
Here we go.
You find the defendant guilty. You're sentenced to however many months in solitary confinement.
Yeah, I think that first day of school, I guess I don't remember. Maybe like the first time you go, like kindergarten or the first day of middle school or first day of high school, maybe you're excited about that newness or whatnot. But yeah, that's first day is always brutal.
The first day wasn't bad. It's the second that got me. NBC did say something last night that hit with me too. And he goes, God, winter's going to suck. And I go, yeah, dude, it's a long way off.
Closer to that, yeah.
We are closer, but his rationale behind it is because he's trying to play play three sports. So he plays football and he's going to play basketball and he's going to play lacrosse. He's going to do all three in high school, which is a bold move, Cotton. But I'm like, you should be able to do that, for God's sakes. Go be a kid. Play it as long as you can. Play as many as you can. But the reality started to hit with him that when he looks at a calendar and sees that he basically has no days off, he will just go from one sport to the next. And while his brothers and mother potentially would go to, let's say, California around the holidays, he will not. He and I will be here at the salt mines, him going to basketball and me preparing to do shows around the Buckeyes, making a run at the national title. So the vacation stuff, I think, hit him that he basically won't have any until spring break. That hit him like a ton of bricks this morning as well. So there's a little bit of a reality check on that. One note, I did not do drop-off today. My wife was pretty jacked up to do it, so I don't have any war stories. We're now at three different schools, so I'm going to have to navigate at least two different drop-off lines. She'll take care of Bootsy. I'll take care of the big twos, the way that this is probably going to go. And I think I have a pretty good strategy on it. One cheat code, if your children have not started yet, here's a little lesson from your Uncle Bo if you're new to this game. Don't be in a big hurry on day one. Everybody's in a big hurry on day one. You can drive up to the school 5 minutes before the doors close, and you can drive right to the front door. My neighbor, we're about 12 minutes from the middle school where we live. My neighbor, I was doing the pictures of NBC and Beamsy. He was already returning from dropping his daughter off. There and back. She was there a full 30 minutes before my children got.
You're well more now.
So I don't know if he was just like, man, I'm done with this. To Reese's point, it's your problem now. Or if it was, he does have a daughter and maybe daughters just want like a bunch of time on day one to get acclimated. I don't know. Get the lockers and the stuff have already been pre-decorated. So, but yeah, on day one, man, now tomorrow it'll be a disaster. But on day one, people are there ultra early. You can kind of cruise in. That's my piece of advice.
Feels like I'm trying to remember, like we were assigned lockers. There was a day for us maybe 3 weeks before school started where we went in, got our textbooks, figured out where our classes were, and were given like locker assignments and got to, I guess, figure out the lockers where they were. Yeah. And I don't think in high school I used my locker, but for my freshman year.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm hearing too, that people don't, and it's even less now because they don't have books.
Yeah,
that makes sense because you don't use your desk here. So
right.
That makes
I just
all
carry
the
with
sense
me. Yeah, I'm a Sherpa.
Your desk is just a
placeholder.
I just
had a backpack full of six textbooks at any time.
We do have one other bit of business to take care of here in the first segment. E2 Brutus. I mean, just stab me in the back.
Did you win?
You're taking days off to spend time with my arch nemesis. I have two arch nemesis in this building, and everybody knows it. Tito and Adam King. And you took time off of this program to go spend time with one of my arch nemesis.
So, I mean, first of all, I took time to go play golf.
Huh?
Tito was there.
Was he the organizer?
Yeah, I think he is the organizer.
All right.
But hold on. Why is Tito your arch nemesis? Like, you're way better than that.
Like I'm King, punching
King,
down
King, the ultimate punch down.
King, I get a little bit because you know he's you did the same job and all of that. Yeah. He tries to say he's got great hair, which I don't know about that. But
right.
Well, I mean, Tito, that shouldn't even be on your horizon. I don't understand that.
I'm Tywin Lannister, and he's a little
What are we doing?
It's just one of my favorite bits. And it's funny, in the old days when I used to see Moore, he used to come on with Rothman and I and do like fantasy football, and I would just act like I hated him.
And so that it was just a bit. Like I love Tito.
Well, that's funny. You act. Most people really do.
Most people really do hate him. I don't hate him at all. I think he's great. But it was a funny bit that we did years ago. So anytime I've ever see him, I always it's kind of like it was kind of a bit on like Seinfeld and Newman is kind of what it was. It was like, hello, Tito. Or I would call him Jeff instead of Tito. Like I would do that.
Like Tyvus calls Joshua Josh.
Josh, yeah, exactly.
The only person in the world that does that.
The only one that gets away with it. That's good. Did you win?
I did not. 36 holes of golf, Bo, when you don't play a lot of golf, is a lot of golf. And I started to feel it at the end. Also, I did not chip good yesterday. I was hitting the ball really well. But my chipping kind of let me down. So,
who won?
I won a Tito's buddies one.
Of course. Probably an inside job.
I think most of the people there are Tito's buddies, so.
He's got that many.
I mean, I guess if you pay people.
That's right. That's a little bit more. Because we got an on-course report that you were winning.
I was. I was actually still at least tied for the lead through 27 holes.
Jeez.
And then one guy played, the guy that won played super well on his second 18. And it's all handicapped, and some of these guys on getting two shots on one hole, and that's tough to get over.
That is. That's very tough to overcome.
It was a fun day, though, but I was worn out.
Are you suggesting that he runs a good golf tournament?
I mean, they're fun to play in. It's pretty cool. Okay.
I guess everybody can have one thing.
We can get you down here for one of them.
No. You know, if the Golden Bear sends an invite, potentially, I'm not coming down to play in anything that I was putting on.
Maybe we can make Tito have one at your club.
Jeez, can you imagine letting him in there? Gosh. Not letting him on the gates. He'd be a shoot upon entrance. This guy walks on the property, take him out. Done. The Buckeyes are number one in the AP, so we did get that part right. I try to remember when we predicted that, how we all thought that would go, but the Buckeyes are number one in the AP. There was one anomaly that has been a very long time since it's been the case. We will get to that, and if it's a harbinger of things to come, coming up next, we're off and running on a Tuesday. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Bobby Carpenter was voted Best Talk Radio Personality by Columbus Monthly Readers. Catch Bobby daily on Morning Chute, 6 to 8 a.m. on the Fan's YouTube channel, the Fan app, and on demand on the 10 TV streaming app. Oh, and Tito's there too. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We have a rain-free afternoon ahead of us. That's a nice thing to hear. Less humid, mostly sunny skies, highs around 81. Overnight, mostly clear skies, lows of 64. Clouds gradually increase once again for your Wednesday. There's a chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms developing, mainly later in the day, with highs around 80. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat. Because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
Indeed it is, and we are proudly brought to you and sponsored by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for nearly 80 years. The AP poll is out. Preseason poll. The Buckeyes, much like in the coaches poll, will start the year atop the AP preseason poll. The poll itself, it's pretty interesting how it all shook. I cannot recall exactly how we thought it was or how close we got. Did you guys write down? We did this, I think, on Thursday or Friday of last week.
It was Friday, and I wrote it down. Then I threw that piece of paper out.
I did write it down, and I still kept it because I keep these yellow legal pads, which I love. I initially, I scratched it out. It's a bad job out of me. Initially, I had Ohio State, Oregon, Georgia, Indiana, Notre Dame was my thought. And then at the last second, I changed it to, because I saw that, remember last year it was flipped?
Mm-hmm.
So I flipped it and I put Oregon 1, Ohio State 2, Georgia, Indiana, Notre Dame. Bake, do you remember how you did?
So I remember my first three were Oregon, Notre Dame, Ohio State. And then I believe I had Georgia and then Indiana.
Okay. So they went Ohio State, Oregon, Georgia, Notre Dame, Texas, 1 through 5. Indiana was 6. Miami was 7, Texas A&M 8, 9 Ole Miss, 10 Oklahoma. Other Big Ten teams in the top 25, USC came in at 14, Michigan at 16, Washington at 17, Penn State at 18, Iowa at 22. So a lot of Big Ten representation here, including the, obviously the top two teams in the country and three of the top six. You will notice that in others, in terms of first place votes, here is how those went. Ohio State received 40, so even more robust than the coaches poll. Coaches poll, they received 38. In this poll, the Associated Press, they received 40. Oregon had the second most first place votes. They came in second, but they had 14 votes for number one overall. Indiana had the third most votes. They were 8 of them. They came in 6th overall. Then Notre Dame had 6 first place votes. The Irish, as I mentioned, finished, come in 4th in the preseason, and then Miami has 1 first place vote. They came in at number 7, and that was the end of the first place votes. What is missing from first place vote getters, gentlemen, on the first day of school for the boys?
A team from the Southeastern Conference did not register a single first place vote, yet a team in the South did, but it was the Miami Hurricanes.
Not one preseason AP first place vote. In an era where there is more, certainly much more ability for more teams to win it. Parity running supreme. You could make an argument upwards of a dozen teams could win the national title this year. You could make logical cases for it. And yet not a single Southeastern Conference team got a single first place vote. Do you know when the last time that has been the case?
I'm going to go 2002.
Not quite that far back, Big.
Oh, really? I would have guessed even further than that.
No, so there's, I guess, one. There's one that's a no-brainer.
2020?
No.
No,
okay, go ahead, Big. You got one.
I really don't. I have no clue. Because, like I said,
well,
I would have guessed it was longer.
Here's your hint. Two of them are employed at this radio station.
So
one of them does the morning show.
So it would have been 2014, 2015.
2015.
Buckeyes returned everybody off a national champion or a unanimous preseason.
They got all of them, yeah.
They got all of them.
Okay. Yeah.
So they got all of them in 2015. But that's the last time it's happened.
But, Bo, none of that matters because they put 80,000 people in every stadium every Saturday. So it doesn't matter. You don't have to win national champions to be the best.
No, it doesn't matter. I saw, and Paul will be honest, as he is every single Thursday at 10:30. He was on ESPN yesterday, like reacting to the poll and reacting to some of these things. And he did think that the top three teams in some order should be Oregon, Notre Dame, and Ohio State. He had Oregon number one. I don't have a problem with that. I think it makes all the sense in the world for Oregon to be number one. When you do 20 most interesting, you look at Oregon, you go, yeah, that's a squad that can go win it all. Notre Dame, I get that as well. The reality of this is that the Southeastern Conference was caught flat-footed with name, image, and likeness and free transfer. And everything that that conference was doing under the table for decades is now above board. And quite honestly, they don't have enough programs that are up for it. And up for it probably organizationally, up for it financially, absolutely. The weird thing too is like the programs that kind of have the most money aren't necessarily the ones that are traditionally great. Like A&M's got money coming out its ears. A&M is not traditionally a great college football program. They have great passion, but they haven't really won a whole bunch of anything in their history, but they do have the money now. And so you see them in the preseason top 10. Another team that you just didn't know. Ole Miss does not have money coming out of its ears, but it does. The money it does has is very motivated. In the NIL era, Ole Miss has been a pretty consistent contender coming out of that conference. Alabama, conversely, has fallen off a cliff. And I don't think it's Kalen DeBoer's problem as much as people want to put it on him, as it is they just don't have the funding to be able to pay for the players that they used to be able to get when Saban was there under the table. They just don't have that anymore. And so all of those things have changed. Texas obviously does have the money. Georgia's pretty good on money too, but nobody thinks high enough of those programs to give them number one votes in the preseason, which is pretty shocking to me, especially in an era where you're talking about upwards of what, 5 teams got first place votes and not one from the SEC did. The one we liked the best, the one I should just speak for, I'll speak for myself. The one I liked the best and the 20 most interesting was Georgia. I don't really see any holes there. I don't know if they're dynamic enough to be able to contend with Ohio State and Oregon, but I certainly could make an argument that you could give them a first place vote. Nobody else did. Conversely, up here, we have had a bunch of programs with a bunch of money who are organized and ready to go from Jump Street on NIL and free transfer. And Ohio State's been the model of it. Oregon obviously has been among the models. Indiana is the pinnacle of this when you think of what they've done in one of the most stupefying turnarounds in the history of the sport, of any sport, what Indiana did with Cignetti in 2 years. But none of those programs are going anywhere. They are organized. They are locked in. They are financially ready to go. The other one that we talk about a lot, obviously, is Notre Dame. And I think about a month ago, I think we kind of got into this a little bit. You can make an argument that Marcus Freeman is as powerful as anybody in college football right now because of what he's doing in recruiting, what he has energized in that fan base, the way that he has rallied their donors, what they've done in the portal. Notre Dame's not going anywhere. So this, where we are right now in college football is where we're going to be for a little while. And I don't sense this changing. I think that the SEC is probably looking in the rearview mirror of their best times. And aside from Texas, Oklahoma, maybe LSU, we'll see, but they, you have to have that combination of coach and finances and a booster base that's got ultra deep pockets that can make it all go. And there just aren't enough programs down there that do. So I think this is just the beginning of all of this, quite honestly, guys.
Yeah, there was a book written by one Paul Feinbaum a couple years ago called My Conference Can Beat Your Conference.
Yeah.
And that's just not the case anymore. It's interesting. Football or collegepolltracker.com has a detailed breakdown of all 69 AP voters and how they voted 1 through 25. Mm-hmm. And it's as wild as you would imagine when you look at how the votes were doled out with first place votes, because people have an idea of who they think is going to be really good. They're the 1 through 6. You could say, oh, I could see them winning a national championship. But outside of that, so many teams have a wide variety of questions, more so now than ever.
Yeah.
Like it's, I don't know if it's ever been like this where every team's got a ton of questions and they're all different questions with each team. But I think Ohio State and Oregon have the least amount of questions going into this season.
Which is crazy to think with the guys that got drafted right off of this Ohio State team, mm-hmm, and that defense. But when I saw this, one of the first things I thought of, and it's something that we've talked a lot about this offseason, is the disrespect of Julian Sayin and how it didn't make sense. And if you think the Ohio State Buckeyes are the best team in the country this year, you have to think Julian Sayin's going to be pretty damn good and have a pretty damn good year.
All of that evened out, didn't it? All of that talk in the spring about, can Sayin do this? They got 40 first place votes in the preseason. People think he's going to be really good. And that's, they think this Buckeye offense is going to be really, really good. What should the job of an AP pollster be? Is this prognosticating the best teams in the country right now, or are they trying to think about what they're going to be at the end of the year? That is a task that I think is an interesting one. We'll get into that a little bit. Ryan Day on how the first week of camp has gone as well. That's coming up in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Apex Pros. The pros who knows.
All right, here's what's up on a Tuesday edition of the program. Buckeyes now tied for Alabama for the second most preseason number one ranking behind Oklahoma's number 10. The question, I think it's interesting if you're an Associated Press pollster, which I was for 2 years. It's been 20 years, but 20 years ago I did it for two seasons. And the way that I did it was I kept it almost entirely week to week. So I had very little poll carryover from week to week. I would do the preseason poll predicated on who was returning and looking at schedules and how they thought they were going to be. And then I would kind of take that group of 25 and then I would have probably upwards of 40 teams that I would kind of keep an eye on. And then I would just kind of chart them week to week. And then whoever was most impressive that week, depending on the matchups, I would elevate and drop them. So for example, my poll was pretty malleable from a week-to-week standpoint. I didn't have a pull mentality in those days. I wasn't like, well, you started at one, you're one until you lose. Like, that's not the way that I did it. I also think it's very interesting to ask a pollster, like, well, what are you, or do you think this, do you think Ohio State's the best team in the country right now? Or do you think that they will be? Because those might be two different, very, very different answers. If you guys were doing this, would you say in a preseason poll, this is how I think they'll end, or this is how I think they are right now?
This is how I think they are right now. I think going into the preseason, if one was to play two and so on and so forth, I think how does this team look right now? Because teams, all of these teams, I think will be wildly different a month from now. Like, what's this Ohio State team going to look like post September 12th against Texas? There was the news out of Austin that Texas left tackle injured his knee yesterday at practice. He's getting an MRI this morning. That's a huge blow to the Longhorns. Yeah. They don't have their big left tackle protecting Arch Manning's blind side. So I think it fluctuates so much, and even more so in this day and age, that I think you have to go by week to week, and your preseason one is, all right, who's the best now?
That's how I think it should be, and I guess that's why I probably thought Oregon was the team that should start the season number one, because they bring back all of those guys from last year's team, and I don't think they have a ton of questions about them other than can they win the big one, because they have a history of not. Bo, I know it's totally different, but each week I put in my best 10 teams in the high school area for the Dispatch, and I do it every week, like, which team is the best team right now? Like, if this team played this team, who would win? And, you know, they would go over this team. So that's how I always try to look at it. I know it's hard sometimes because that bias of, well, I think at the end they're going to be the best. I think of Penn State and I see them at 18 and I'm like, there's no way they're the 18th best team in the country right now. But
right.
At the end of the year with that schedule, they're probably going to be ranked somewhere in there, maybe a little higher.
I think you could apply that same logic to Ohio State right now. They have 50 new dudes. 50. I mean, this is a referendum on Ryan Day. This is an acknowledgement of Ryan Day, Arthur Smith, Julian Sand, Jeremiah Smith, and an offensive line returning with Bo Jackson behind it. And this is a referendum on what Ohio State is as a program. There's no way that as they stand right now, they are. It's hard to make an argument they're the number one team just because of the amount of questions that you have around them. They're certainly one of them, but honestly, you could apply that logic that I just laid out to almost every one of these teams. Oregon's kind of the one where it's like everybody's back and there's not a whole lot there. I don't know how many new faces they have total on the roster. I don't remember getting into that in 20 most interesting, but them and Georgia were the two that kind of felt to me like they returned the most on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I want to say both of them returned 14 starters.
Yeah.
And like 6 and 8, something like that. I think I remember Oregon was 6 on offense and 8 on defense.
Yeah, it was one of those situations where, here, I can pull it up real quick. Oregon. Those were the two that felt to me like they had the most, they had the least amount of questions. So in terms of guys in, 10 out of 11 on offense are guys who were there. And then on defense, it is, it's 2. Geez, it's 9 out of 11. That doesn't necessarily mean 9 out of 11 starters. That means 9 guys who are in the program have elevated or returning. So they only brought in, they have 2 transfer starters on defense, a nickelback, and then Coy Parrish, who everybody wanted out of Minnesota. And then just Michael Bennett at right tackle is the only transfer. So that's why you can look at Oregon and you can go, good grief. I understand they haven't won at the ultimate level. And the last two times they were on this stage, they fell flat on their face. But at the same time, they don't have a whole lot of question marks here. And I think Georgia is very similar, where as Ohio State has very little question marks offensively, and we can get in the weeds on that a little bit if we want to, defensively, there are a lot of questions with this team. And we trust Matt Patricia, and we trust Walton and Laurinaitis and Larry Johnson and all those guys, that they'll elevate those guys up and get them ready, because it's expert coach at the highest level. But they do have new faces and new places. And that's something that some of the other ones don't have. So I think it's a very interesting question. Do you look at it how they are right now or how they are going to be? From the Ohio State perspective, starting the year number one in the country is nothing new to anyone. I mentioned all those losses on defense. Ryan Day, available over the weekend. How's it going with all the new faces on that side of the ball, Coach?
Yeah, there's no like rebuilding of anything around here, as you know. So like that's the standard. The standard's the standard. And I think all the guys on the defensive staff and the players would tell you the same thing. They're expected to be the best defense in the country. And you know, same thing on offense. But that being said, you know, it's a different group of guys, and it's one thing to, you know, play in that role where you're coming in and playing 15 to 20 snaps. Another thing to carry all the water and carry the burden of making the plays and the number of plays that it's going to require throughout the season. So I think guys are learning and getting playing into those roles, but the potential is there. And honestly, the experience is there, just not all together here at Ohio State. There's some guys who have played football. You know, we'll see. But it is, like literally I said all the time, a race against time to get better. And, you know, the coaches understand that. And so this will be a big week, I think, for the defense to see, you know, where it can take the next step, where it can continue to improve. Because, yeah, to your point, yeah, there's no like, okay, well, you know, we'll kind of figure this out and, you know, get it figured out halfway through the season. It's not going to work that way. But there's nobody in the building that would say that. I think they all understand what needs to get done.
Yeah, there's a standard. There's a standard. It's on that side of the ball where there are going to be some question marks. And the good news is that unlike last year, you're going to get a tune-up. You get a tune-up game before you head to Austin, then get tested in the biggest way possible. But, folks, this is why this is such a fun job to do in this town. This is why it's so great to be a Buckeye fan. You got 50 new faces. You're revamping a defense that lost three starters that all were drafted in the top 11 of the NFL draft, and you're the number one team in the country. Like, they've got real questions. There's a ton of questions on this team defensively, especially, offensively too. How's Arthur going to work with all of this talent? I mean, there's a bunch of questions here, and you still start the year ranked number one in the preseason. That's pretty dang good.
I think it also shows what the voters, coaches, and AP think of Ryan Day's lieutenants and the job that he's done of hiring NFL bona fides. Mm-hmm. You know, Matt Patricia parachutes in, and yes, he's got a ton of talent, but it's one thing to come in year one and be able to marriage perfectly what you defensively, your philosophy is, with that kind of talent, and it worked out to they were the best defense in the country. And so I think there's a confidence that Patricia can do that again, because when you look at the guys Ohio State brings in that they will potentially start, they're guys that have played, you know, that are all seniors, mm-hmm. that have played a ton of football and that have played at the biggest schools, playing the biggest teams in the biggest stages. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a confidence that with Matt Patricia and those adults, you can have a really successful defense, or you can have a successful act two for Matt Patricia in Columbus. And I also think offensively is you have all the talent. You have the unicorn in college football. You have a quarterback that was a Heisman finalist in his freshman season. You've also got a guy in Arthur Smith that has coordinated everybody. Everybody with a big name currently in the NFL, Arthur Smith's had some time with.
Feels like it, yeah.
I think it's even more than a confidence in Matt Patricia. You heard Ryan Day there. The standard is the standard, and the standard has been set here at Ohio State. Like, you lose players every year. And Ohio State had the number one defense in the country with Jim Knowles. And then you lost eight of those guys, and then you mm-hmm. do it all over again. So I think it's, I think especially with the Buckeyes being number one in both of these preseason polls, it's just the easy pick, right? Ohio yeah. State, more than anyone, it seems like year in and year out for the past 50 years, for the most part, has been a team that if you say, hey, this is going to be a top 10 or a top 5 team, they're going to be, because they've just continued to get great players. And when you have great players, it's a lot easier to be really good on the field.
They're the Berkshire Hathaway of college football. They're the safest bet forever that you could put money into. Like, it just was always going to be taken care of. It was always going to be in a good spot. And that's just kind of where that they've always been. One place I noticed it, I have played a little bit of the college football game in the last week. And I continue to still suck at it. But one thing that I noticed was, Ohio State's defensive player ratings. So last year, I'm pretty sure Caleb started as a 98, but he may have been an and eventually got to a 99. He may have had a 99 out of the gates. But then Sonny was well into the 90s, and Arvell was into the 90s in terms of a rating standpoint. Just one Buckeye above 90 on the defensive side, and that was Kenyatta Jackson. He's a 91 in the game. Terry Moore is a 90, and then McLean and Matthews are both 88s. So that's kind of where that sits defensively. Reese, if you're curious, what's the team this year? Who's this year's NC State in the game? I believe it's K-State. It's Kansas State.
Like, huh?
I know it. Every year there's some team that randomly goes like 8-0. Last year, I probably did four or five seasons with like two or three with Ohio State and then a couple others. And you can just play offense now, so a game lasts like 20 minutes if you want to. They go really quick, which is fun. And it's K-State. I had the boys pull up their seasons, and oftentimes – K-State would be in the top 10 in the country towards the end of it.
Does Texas Tech have Brendan Sorsby on the roster in this game?
They do not. No, they do not. They do not. But they seem to have good years every time. The other thing that's pretty consistent with the game is everybody has losses. Like, everybody has got two losses. Like, I just beat USC. I lost to Texas in week two by a field goal, and I just beat USC last night, and I'm ranked second in the country. The only undefeated power, the only undefeated team in the country is Georgia. That's it. And we're 7-8 weeks into the thing. And a lot of teams have two or three losses already. Speaking of losses, Liv came, and it looks like it's going to go. We'll get to the details on that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
After the games are over Friday night, keep it locked on the Fan for high school football overtime. Ryan Baker and Lee Cochran keep you up to date with all the latest news and scores. Your home for Friday Night Lights, the Fan. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. They've all been paid by the Cleveland Browns. This is Bishop and Friends.
Hey, fellas, when it comes time to making a decision like the ring, you don't want to wing it. That's why I trust my friends at Diamond Seller. For nearly 80 years, their family has helped generations of couples celebrate life's biggest moments with exceptional quality, larger diamonds, and better value. And guys, here's the best part. They're going to walk you through it step by step so you know you're getting it right. Whether you're ready to propose or ready to upgrade, visit Diamond Seller at Sawmill Road or Easton Town Center. Learn more anytime at DiamondSeller.com. I'm going to be very candid with you. I've kind of lost interest in a lot of this. What I'm curious about is just the play for the way back for some of these players. It's clear that LIV Golf has come. It has went. It has lost. Nobody would have thought. I certainly didn't think that the Saudis would lose interest in this thing so quickly. LIV Golf confirming Monday that its schedule for individual and team championships that were set to be played in Michigan will not be played. They've been canceled, which means that they will finish their season, I guess, in Indianapolis or in Indiana at some point. I think it's in Indianapolis. Is that where it is? LIV Golf CEO Scott O'Neill releasing a statement: by concluding the season now, we can put our full resources behind what comes next and maintain the operational rigor this transition demands. Also reporting out there that John Rahm has already worked a deal to return to the PGA Tour with a fine. I saw some of that yesterday as well. He's kind of the one. I guess there was also some reporting that Tyrrell Hatton could have a similar kind of return to play thing where it's a fine. And then it's kind of the Brooks Koepka situation where you don't get into those signature tournaments on the PGA Tour right away. You got to earn your way back into it, which I think is all fair. I think that's a fine way to do it. And we'll see. And we'll see if there is a spot for LIV left out there or what that thing becomes. My hunch is probably not. If it failed the way that it did when it had all of the stars that it had, I can't imagine Bryson DeChambeau's stand is going to be something that attracts viewers or attendance for that matter.
No, so LIV Golf has Indianapolis starting Thursday. John Rahm's already clinched the individual season title. So for whatever is happening this week, it's just to finish second and third among the players.
Yeah.
So it's the ultimate consolation for something they got richly compensated for. John Rahm, three-time individual champion for LIV Golf, and it means nothing.
Not much. You know, the other thing that as I'm reading this is in Westfield, Indiana. This is where that incredible youth sports complex that I've spent parts of the last several summers at. I've been all around out there. I've never seen this golf club. Never. It's out there somewhere, and that's well north of the city. So interesting that it's going to turn out that way. But that's about all that's left. I guess it's Rahm and it's Hatton, and then it's, I think Cam Smith is still there a little bit, but there's not a whole lot left on that thing. So I guess what happens with DeChambeau will be the next interesting thing. He is somebody that certainly drives some attention. I know, for example, like my boys love him because of all the YouTube stuff. That's where they see his content, so they think he's cool as heck. I don't know if it resonates with anybody other than the diehard golf fans beyond that, though.
John Rahm was the number one player in the world for 50 weeks.
He was. Yep. Yeah.
No, nothing.
Well, he was number one. He was the best player in the world and then left. And then was going to win the Memorial. He ended up winning it. Was going to win the Memorial. Remember, he got pulled?
Yep.
Because of the COVID testing? Remember that?
Yeah.
Crazy.
So, Bo, you said you were surprised that the Saudis gave up on this so fast.
I was.
I wonder, and this is not to be, this isn't being political at all or anything, but I wonder if just the climate over there changing and the war going on made them pull their money out of this. I wonder.
I think they pulled before it, didn't they, Bake?
I don't think so.
Before we were all worried about the Strait of Hormuz and all that stuff. I thought they were pulled out before.
I don't think so. I think there was already stuff going on.
Well, there's always stuff with Iran.
They did that. But so I wonder if that would have changed things for LIV Golf here, even though it was definitely struggling. I know they had gotten onto Fox a little bit and their TV deal had gotten better. And that was probably the way to them maybe being relevant is getting more eyeballs on it. I also wonder, too, and I'm not somebody who thinks these guys should have to pay a fine or serve some kind of penance coming back. Like, I kind of feel like this, the egg on their face and this blowing up is enough here. Like, I don't remember, and I don't know if you know this, Bo. Like, back when the USFL was around and players went and played in the USFL rather than the NFL, did they have to pay fines to come back to the league or vice versa? Like, I know hockey players, and I know it's not a direct challenge, but I know there's like Valerie Nichushkin, who's a Blue Jacket now. He played his first 2 years in the NHL, and then he left, and he went to the KHL to play back home for a while, and then he came back over, and there was no problem with any of that. Like I said, I know we don't have competing leagues probably
the closest, the USFL analogy, your closest is probably honestly our current president. I mean, he was basically blackballed by the NFL after what he did with the USFL. That's why he's never gotten an NFL team.
But none of the players,
but none of the players
were punished.
No, but I think in this instance, the players are kind of like owners. Because, you know what I mean? Like, they are their own franchise in a sense. So that's probably the closest thing of that. And the climate was different then, too. I hear you on it. And I know that's kind of the way you feel about it. And you and I don't see it the same on this. But at the same point, like, there's going to be a penance. And I think it's still shocking. By the way, you were right on this as well. We first went to war with Iran end of February. It was April 30th when LIV officially said, we're done. That was trending that way for a while, but it wasn't until April 30th when they were donezo on it. So something there. We don't have time to get into it, and there's so many layers to it. But you remember the HBO show that was initially called Showtime, and then they had to change it to Winning Time about the Lakers? They ought to just do the last 10 years of Laker ownership and
it would
do
be fascinating.
Yes, and do it as Succession. Because that's really Succession. The death of Jerry Buss, his bozo kids running into walls and each other while fumbling all over it. And then Jeannie Buss, like at the end, trying to step in the middle of this. I mean, this is like one of the Roy kids. I love you, but you're not serious people. That's what's happened here. It would be a fascinating series if they told the real truth on what happened here in the last 5 to 10 years of Laker ownership. Second hour of the program coming up next. We kick it off with the real truth, Bishop and Friends. Right here.
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Ohio State will enter the 2026 college football season, number one for the ninth time in program history. Buckeyes earned 40 of 69 first-place votes in the AP preseason top 25 poll, First time for Ohio State being the number one in the preseason since 2015. Those nine number one rankings are second most all-time behind Oklahoma. And for the first time in 65 years, the Big Ten's going to represent number one and number two. The Oregon Ducks got 14 first-place votes. Indiana received 8 first-place votes, but the Hoosiers will start the year ranked 6th behind number 5 Texas, number 4 Notre Dame, and 3rd-ranked Georgia. The Longhorns got a massive scare Monday. Left tackle Trevor Goosby injured his knee at practice. The 6'7", 320-pound senior is set to get an MRI today. Texas is going to host Ohio State in 25 days on September 12th. In baseball, Tuesday, Reds have the Cardinals at 6:40. Guardians have the Giants at the same time. This update is sponsored by Germain Toyota. For unbeatable service and sales, visit Germain Toyota on the corner of I-70 and Bryce Road.
Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast, or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour on a Tuesday, 29 minutes from now, we will ask Tabari why he stiffed us last week, and he better have a good excuse. Between now and then, time for the real truth. Hit it, fellas.
Bishop and Friends present The Real Truth.
Sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years.
I don't think Dom listens much to the show. I'm not sure he even knows what time we're on, but it'd be the best con ever, or I guess the best gimmick ever, if when you asked him that question, he was like, yeah, myself and my good friend Jeff Thidoff were playing golf.
I wish Tommy would have been there yesterday.
Oh, it would have improved. I mean, everything. I mean, just and then somehow Adam King on his bag.
Where
everybody wins.
Where he should be.
That's right.
We had discussed the AP Top 25 earlier in the program. You heard from the update anchor, the Big Ten's 1-2 for the first time in 65 years. A three-loss Big Ten or SEC team will make the playoff this season. Is that the real truth?
So, full disclosure, what got me thinking about this was the video game. But what you realize, the video game's a pretty good simulation, other than the one anomaly they have every year. Last year it was NC State. It appears this year it's K-State. But aside from that, it's a pretty good simulation of talent because they do such an incredible job of rating these players accurately. So one thing that I noticed was, and we noticed it a little bit in 20 Most Interesting as well, so many of these Big Ten and SEC powerhouses play multiple top 15 teams in the preseason. Multiple. Oregon does. Ohio State does. Certainly the Big Ten, most all of the teams at the top, save for Indiana. Although even Indiana's schedule is more difficult this year than it was last year in that they have to play the Buckeyes in the regular season. Same is true of the SEC. I don't know how Texas navigates that schedule as good as they are. I don't know how they navigate it with two losses. The other thing you have to remember here, and why I do think this absolutely is the real truth, is I think you could see a Big Ten or SEC team with two losses playing in a conference championship game, getting a conference championship game loss and being 10-3 and going, now what do you do with them? And the reality is, if you've played six teams that are top 15 in the country, you're going to have a real case. I think what we are headed for, if they've reverse engineered parity to a certain extent, couple that with nine-game conference schedules that really matter now in the Big Ten, that they've added the West Coast schools and have always mattered in the SEC because their conference is smaller, and you're just going to have teams that are going to take on losses. And I do think a Big Ten or SEC team with three losses is going to get in this year. I just think there's too many teams that are ranked, and I think the schedules are just far too difficult for a team to manage them with only one loss getting to a title game in their conference.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we've had a three-loss team in each iteration of the 12-team playoffs so far. Now, the one year was Clemson, mm-hmm. and they were the ACC champ.
Yeah,
auto-bid. So that's different than the Big Ten or the SEC. And then last year we had Alabama in this thing with three losses. So I think this is absolutely the real truth. I will say this in the Big Ten. I don't think you're going to have four teams with two losses or less. And if you do have four teams, I think one of those teams is going to be Penn State. And I've already said, with the schedule that Penn State plays this year, I don't believe they deserve to be in a college football playoff at 10-2 with that extremely soft schedule. So I do think this is the fact. And I think maybe... I guess it's possible you could get one from each league this year in this thing with three losses.
I think it is. I mean, Indiana, it plays no... So, Indiana plays... Obviously, they host us. They're at Michigan the following week, so that depends if you believe in Michigan. They host USC, then they go at Washington. They don't play Oregon. No Oregon on the schedule for Indiana. No Penn State on the schedule for Indiana. So, they're big money Big Ten games. Boy, they also get Northwestern, Rutgers, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Purdue. Holy smokes. I don't know what the over-under is on Indiana, folks, but bet the over. They're not... There's no way that team is any worse than 10-2. No way. That would be surprising, honestly. To me, it feels like 11-1.
And they're on the verge of Penn State there, where if they go 10-2 with that schedule, maybe they don't deserve to be in.
Yeah, I mean, it's their Big Ten portion of it is just really, really easy. I wanted to pull up USC's. A lot of people are on the Trojans, and I like them a lot this year as well. I'm wondering how much of that has to do with their schedule. So... Obviously, they do host Oregon, Washington, and us, but they have to go to Penn State and they have to go to Bloomington. So their other Big Ten games are Rutgers, they're at Rutgers, Maryland at home. Those are convenient logistically. I think you could have one from each is the long and short of it.
Bo, we've talked a lot about the scheduling of big-time games in the non-conference, or at least playing somebody. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a fan of Texas saying, oh, our three losses, we played Ohio State when you lost to 4-8 Florida. But right. Maybe this is what you can do within your own conference. Like, say Penn State goes 10-2 and USC goes 9-3. Maybe in your own conference you say, well, USC is going to get that bid into the college football playoff over Penn State because mm-hmm. they played a tougher schedule.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that is the evolution of this. Yeah, Texas is... Not only they host us, these are their ranked opponents. They're at Tennessee, Oklahoma in the shootout. They host Florida, who's not ranked. Ole Miss, Missouri, and at LSU. So that is the... and at A&M. Texas' schedule's a full day, too.
So the Longhorns have the same odds as Texas Tech -200 to make the college football playoff. The Lone Star State will get three teams in the CFP. Is that the real truth?
Let me look at A&M's schedule first before I answer that. I think they got two, because I think the Beloved Ponies are getting in, Reese. The question is A&M versus Texas.
Mm-hmm.
New old laptop, not super fast. Let's see. Okay, A&M schedule. They're at LSU. They're at Missouri. They're at Bama. They're at Oklahoma and host Texas. No. Lone Star State's getting two. They're going to get SMU, and they're going to get... And I don't think they're going to get Texas Tech. Well, what about Tech? Good Lord, they could get three that way, couldn't they?
That's what I was asking about Kansas State and the NCAA in the college football video game, is because the Big 12 is probably going to send a team, and
who is it?
Right.
So probably is Texas Tech. So it would probably be Texas Tech, and then if you believe if SMU gets in, which I think they're going to be right there to get in, then you just need one of Texas and Texas A&M. I'm going to change my answer. I think the state of Texas will get three in.
So the Big 12 is going to come down to Texas Tech and BYU again, and they might get both of them in. Who knows? I think Texas Tech is getting in because I think that roster, especially that defense, is good enough. And again, if he's totally healthy, and we don't know for sure, but it's trending that he's going to be there week one, I think if Will Hammond's totally healthy, I don't think it's that big of a drop-off, if any at all, from Brendan Sorsby, quite frankly. So I think Texas Tech is getting in. I know the schedule's tough, but I think Texas is too talented. I think Texas is going to get in. And then it's just, do you think it's SMU, or do you think it is Texas A&M? I'm with you, Bo. I tend to lean towards SMU. We'll get in and win the ACC. So I would say right now, I think it's the real truth.
Yeah.
But I could easily see it not being.
We might have to carry this over to the next segment, but Todd Monken already knows who will quarterback the Cleveland Browns week one in Jacksonville. Is that the real truth?
Let me rephrase this to both of you. Let's pretend you're the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, and you've had access to that quarterback room since February. Do you think you would know?
Yes.
I tell you, I got to be honest, after watching that game on Saturday, I have questions now.
Well, no, that's different. We'll get into your questions because I think we all have questions. But what I want to know is, like, if you're the head coach of a team, an NFL team, a college team, a high school team, a youth football team, and you have access to your entire entire roster, and you've been around them since February, do you think you know by now who the guy is?
You would think.
In every
you would.
Position?
Yes.
You would think you
would. Of course you would.
Yes.
Of course. Of course. Yes, you probably, there's a million reasons to do these type, just like we did last year with Ryan. Did we really have to wait until whenever it was in August for Julian to be the guy? Like, had a pretty good idea he was going to be the guy in August, in April. Once you got through the spring game, you felt like he was going to be the guy. Same thing with Will, right? They carry these thing out for various reasons, maybe hoping somebody grabs it by the throat, maybe hoping it elevates, motivates, who knows. But in the back of their head, they have to know. It's human nature to know. We'll get to Bake's questions on the Browns quarterbacks and Todd Monken on the week ahead, where some people kind of picked through some things and maybe looked for some clues on all of this. We'll get to all of that coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on the
All your favorite fan shows are on YouTube. Along with those fake YouTube ads like Chew This Gum and It Grows New Teeth. Experience the splendor of Bo sitting in his closet, Timmy Hall's gaudy gold chains, and Matty Ice wearing a coat in 90-degree weather. It's all there. Head to YouTube and subscribe today. Fan weather
from the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We have a rain-free afternoon ahead of us. That's a nice thing to hear. Less humid, mostly sunny skies, highs around 81. Overnight, mostly clear skies, lows of 64. Clouds gradually increase once again for your Wednesday. There's a chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms developing, mainly later in the day, with highs around 80. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The uncle you never knew you had. The friends you kind of wish you didn't. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, Beck, you had some questions. You were off yesterday, really cheating on Reese and I with that absolutely despicable Tito, and in the process you didn't get a chance to weigh in on what you saw from the Browns quarterbacks on Saturday.
So, and I've been a Deshaun guy the whole time. I thought he was getting the job. I still think he's getting the job.
Yeah.
And I thought that was probably the right move. However, I don't think you're going to get this offense's full potential with Deshaun, because he just doesn't seem willing to get the ball down the field. And this is a team that maybe last year that would have been okay, but this team has more playmakers. You've got Casey Concepcion. You've got Dylan Sampson having another year in this thing. You've got Denzel Boston. You've got Jerry Jeudy, who's going to have more room with these newer receivers. You've got Harold Fannin. The possibility of Shador pushing the ball down the field and opening the field up, just having that threat of somebody that's going to throw it deep, I think that's the way you'll get your Browns' best offense. Now, there are warts with Shador that may not be safe and may not get you to the full potential of your offense. I just think Deshaun is the super safe pick, but this offense is going to be at its best with somebody that'll get the ball downfield.
Well, there's one other component to the offense that you couldn't really see in a preseason game that I think that would give Deshaun an edge, and that's the escapability and the run game. Like, Watson in the run game is superior to Sanders. Let me pose this question to you, because I think this is the question that Todd Monken is attempting to answer, and probably in his own head, even though he's not ready to say it yet, probably already has answered, because, and not because it's some sort of rigged game, but because he's a human and you would have an opinion by now on two guys. Like, you definitely would know, like, which choice. I think everything you said about Deshaun is fair, and I think most of what you said about Shadur is fair. If you're Todd Monken, can you get Deshaun to unleash all of what he is capable of as a quarterback? Can you get Deshaun to trust down the field? Can you get him to be less risk adverse? Is it easier to do that, or is it easier to get Shadur to let the layups be layups? Let there be less from a procedural issue getting out of the huddle. Can you? Which one of those things is easier for you? And the reality is, and we've talked about this for a long time, if it's close, then you would go with Shadur. He's a fifth-round pick. He's under team control for the foreseeable future. If you do believe that there is a lottery pick in Shadur Sanders, then you have to mine that lottery and make sure and try to see if it hits. If you don't believe that he's a lottery ticket, if you do believe that there are some flaws there, and your main goal is to win games the surest way possible, then you go the other direction. But I think if Deshaun wins this job, he's going to have to win it by a large margin because of all of the factors around this decision. And so that's something to pay attention to. Yesterday was a Shadur day at camp. Pretty lackluster practice, honestly, across the board, coming off of the loss Saturday. Just kind of wasn't as crisp. It did pick up as it went along. Both guys made some decent throws. There wasn't anything that was really stood out one way or another. Both guys were more than fine. Todd Monken was asked yesterday before practice what his plan was for this week's practice, which includes that joint practice with the Bills on Thursday. Here was his plan.
I'm excited for that because in that practice we get to see our ones against ones, right? And so that's going to be fun. I got a lot of respect for Joe and the staff there and what Sean initially started and where Joe's trying to take it. And hopefully they're going to have a lot of respect for the way we play and the way we practice and handle ourselves.
So it was a Shadur day yesterday. It'll be a Deshaun day today, today's a long practice. It's like 2 hours and 15 minutes, which is pretty long. Pads should be back on today. Tomorrow will be a Shadur day. And then Thursday, and that's the joint practice day, is scheduled to be a Deshaun day. But Todd did say that both guys will get a go against the ones on Thursday. And then Deshaun will start the preseason game on Saturday. But Monken did say if he and Joe Brady talk after the practice on Thursday and they got enough done what they need to get done, that they will hold starters out of that game on Saturday. The thing that the Browns have got to be very careful of, just aside from the quarterback situation, which we can get into even further in a second, is you have some real big time injuries that are starting to stack. Now, all of this is just out of an abundance of caution, but Carson Schwesinger has not had a single practice yet in training camp, not a single one. And he is an all pro caliber linebacker. And Carson has said, like, I'm good. It's out of an abundance of caution. Potentially next week, you'll see Carson Schwesinger. On the defensive front, Mike Hall has been out for 2.5 weeks now. And he's been out since that Saturday. He got into it with, was it Judkins got into him a little bit and hit him underneath. And there was some little bit of a brawl that broke out that was on Saturday, like 2 weeks ago. He hasn't practiced since. Obviously Malik Collins hasn't practiced on the defensive front as well. Tyson Campbell was in team yesterday, but didn't participate in anything full contact. And I think one of the things that really showed negatively for the Browns is the lack of depth at corner and linebacker in those second and third units. That was an up and down the field anytime they wanted to situation with the Bears. The other thing to pay attention to that, though, and if you watch the game, did you guys notice who was quarterbacking the Bears?
Tyson Bagent?
No, after him.
No.
Case Keenum. AKA a pro.
Oh.
Yeah. And apparently, I didn't know this till yesterday, Antoine Randall-L was calling plays in the second half for the Bears. So, and then Ben Johnson came up post game and talked about how he thinks Antoine Randall-L should be a coordinator and call plays. So I think the Bears used the second half of that in a far more aggressive manner than the Browns did. They used it to kind of elevate and show what Antoine Randall-L is all about. And then if you have Keenum, like Keenum's a pro, he could drop in any operation and throw for 225, 250 yards on any given, probably with 2 days notice, honestly, when you think about it, he's the consummate backup. So all of that to say, there are some depth issues at corner and linebacker. They tried to sign Za'Darius Smith. It looks like he's going to go to Atlanta, so that's depth up front. They were looking at, seems to me like they were looking for a fourth defensive end. So they tried signing Za'Darius Smith. He went elsewhere. Tried signing Jadeveon Clowney. He went elsewhere. So they have some real depth things. I was talking about this with Segura yesterday. They've got probably 10 to 12 spots that are up in the air. And he and I were talking, we can't recall a time where there were that many kind of coin flips. Now, some of that's coaching change and some of that's just new faces. My hunch is they'll also be pretty active on cutdown day, like adding to this and continue to be active. Obviously, they're very active trying to add a fourth defensive end. My hunch is they'll be active trying to add I still don't know, not for sure exactly who their Mike linebacker or their who their third linebacker is, their strong side linebacker. I'm not sure who that would be. I'm not going to be in that much, but right now I'm not even sure who that would be. And then fourth corner, fourth safety. I mean, these are people who are going to play, and right now I'm not sure who the answers to those questions are.
That's not great with only two preseason games remaining. You just got three this year. Cut down days on August 30th. So you have some time there, but, you know, offensively, everything has to start with the quarterback. Once I think you get that quarterback, we talked about this yesterday, but the quarterback question gets answered, there's kind of a trickle-down effect there. You could start to really figure out things on offense. And, yeah, I had wondered, you know, with this defense, there's probably going to be a couple weeks before you really even get the coaches comfortable with what they've got. In terms of who's our best 11 with this is how I think it's going to go. And that might not be figured out till first game, September 13th. So September 12th, the 10th, you know, it just feels like this season, there's going to be a great call for patience with a fan base that traditionally isn't. I just think I still think Todd Monken's the right guy. And so I want to give this season that kind of grace for him. I think once he's able to get it figured out a little bit more after this season, I think there can be something there.
Bo, something else that I came away from that game on Saturday really worried about was the offensive line. And you've talked a lot about Deshaun and his mobility. Maybe that's reason number one for going with Deshaun is I wasn't impressed with this offensive line. And you've talked about depth a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, behind the starters, I don't know what there is outside of DeJuan Jones. So,
and he was in the doghouse a little bit because he didn't even play. He was in at the end of the game, and I think he's their swing tackle to start it, and he was playing in the fourth quarter. They were still mixing up right guard a little bit, so I don't think that they necessarily have the answer to that. So I still think they're searching for things on that offensive front. I think they feel good about four of them, but then the depth behind it, I think, look, that's the reality. I think they're starting 22 if the quarterback can be a C quarterback. I think their starting 22 is pretty good. But beyond that, barring injury, other than at wide receiver, where they have an abundance of talent, everything else is really questionable. Like, I don't know who the second tight end is behind Fannin, and Fannin hasn't had a very good camp. So, like, there's some things there that depth-wise, I think, are going to have to be answered in a real hurry on this. Mr. Tiberi joining in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Bishop and Friends present Tuesdays with Tiberi.
Sponsored by CEC Turf and Tractor. Find your next Kubota tractor at CEC Turf and Tractor. Visit online at cecturfandtractor.com.
So what's your excuse?
What do you mean? What did I do?
Well, where were you last week?
I was in Hilton Head.
And?
Playing golf with gators. Let me tell you something.
Go ahead.
First of all, it's 105 degrees down there, right?
Nice cool sea breeze, though, right?
Humid and whatever. And the rough there you can have. If I ever get in that rough again, you can't get out of it. You can't even see the ball. It's like quicksand. Anyways, and then we're walking around, and I go, oh, my gosh, look at that thing. They're sunning themselves. There's gators everywhere down there. That's a hazard. That's a water hazard.
You don't go into that stuff, buddy.
Well, no.
You should know better.
Well, I've been down there a lot, and I've never really seen the Gators out like that. They were out. It was amazing.
Do you remember? You remember Happy Gilmore, the first one? You remember what happened to Chubbs?
Yeah, Chubbs. Yeah, he got his arm bit off by a gator.
That's right.
End well for Chubbs' hand.
Who but played? No, was this the family who all played?
We all went. I took, we got a nice house, and I had Kels and Taj and the three kids, Mia, the baby girl, yep. Lucci and Giovanni, and then I took Dominic, Michaela, and Noah. And we were all there. And then also, Uncle Tony, as the kids call him, or Don Vito, as I call him, he came along as well, too. Him and beautiful Wendy.
Where's the content on this? How do I not see video of these children running around this house and you and everybody trying to corral? Where is this video?
I just was asked not to do that, so I just didn't do anything. I'll send you some pictures. I'll post some pictures.
Well, you don't have to post if you've been asked not to. You have to be respectful of the people. I was always that with the boys. Like, I don't...
It's like, you know, it was banshee time. It was crazy. I mean, it was crazy. That's all I'll say. And, you know, and then you give them candy and you're living with them. It's one thing when you get them at home and you can give them the candy and then send them home. Well, I was living with them. We were all in the same house. It was different. It was fun.
It was. Let me ask you this. Did you watch the, did you enjoy the HBO show Boardwalk Empire?
I love that show.
It's a great show.
Yeah.
About Atlantic City and Prohibition, Nucky Thompson, Nucky. All of that. Yep. Yeah. Let me ask you this. Did you have any thoughts in your mind that when you introduced Gio to Bootsy, that was a lot like Johnny Torrio introducing Capone to Nucky Thompson?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's what happened at Ohio State Pro Day. There was an education on all the things you can get away with.
That was cute. Your boys and it little awesome, Gio hanging out, and they got to meet all the stars and all that. And Gio had no idea who any of them are. Your boys did, but Gio had no clue.
That's what Bootsy said.
Did you see?
Dad, he didn't know who Jeremiah Smith was. And I said, "Well, did you tell him?"
Jeremiah Smith was a bullfrog, as far as Gio knew. You know, remember. And he had no clue. He was your boys were so nice to him. He enjoyed that.
Well, that's good. They ought to be. We have one rule around here. We don't raise jerks. That's the only rule.
That's a good one.
How long have you been going to Hilton Head? So that's the first part. And then the second part, I'm curious, has it always been like an Ohio expat destination as long as you can remember?
Yeah, it's like the whole Buckeye State is down there. And I told the guy that owns the Frosty Frog down there, he ought to put one in Ohio. I mean, have you ever been?
No, I've never been to Hilton Head, no.
Okay, there's a place called the Frosty Frog, and it is frozen daiquiris with 190 proof. 190 proof. You drink one of those, you're just smiling, Bo. You can't help but smile. And they got every flavor under the sun. And the food is great. But I said, you ought to put one of those in Ohio. But it's everywhere you go. I took kids, they were at the beach. I said, watch this. And I yelled out, OH. Got it back.
Of course you did.
Yeah, but I've been going down 20 plus years. Yeah.
Well, I remember when your kids were, and by the way, today was first day of school for my boys, and so away we go. I got a freshman now, Dommy, which is hard to wrap my head around, but I do. I remember when yours were in high school, and I remember you guys would drive, like you would do Wall on Saturday, and wouldn't you just drive right after Wall? Isn't that how it worked?
Yeah, we would drive down, and we would go first 2 weeks of August with the kids, and, We would wait till Dominic was done with baseball, and then it was just, you know, before school, and we'd go 2 weeks, and then I would tell him, I said, and now my life is changing, because it was football.
And Urban had that great line, right? It was like, now I'm going into the bunker, like I'll see you in February. That's kind of the way it is for us, too.
That's the way it is. It's a little different now for me, because I'm semi, kind of more than semi-retired, but... you know, I'm going to keep, you know, I'm looking forward to taping with Ryan and doing the coaches shows and keeping my fingers in it a little bit. But, yeah, I'm excited about this football season. I was with Mark Pantone yesterday at the Buckeye Cruise and Charles Burris's golf tournament that they had and got rained out a lot of it. But they made a lot of money. But, you know, it's pretty amazing when you think about the way they're operating now. And Ohio State, I think, is going to be the example or is the example for a lot of the colleges out there on how to do it now when it comes to NIL and when it comes to, you know, showcasing the program. It was like you and I were talking when they opened camp and you were broadcasting there and it was like an NFL program. But, you know, a lot of the schools aren't doing that, and they're going to copy Ohio State. That's going to come. That's a moneymaker. And then at the end of the day, until they can figure out rules, you know, you got to find a way to pay these guys. And I think Ohio State's being very, very what's the word I'm looking for? They are kicking all the tires and figuring out how to make every dollar they can.
Yeah, I mean, the phrase I use around here, Dami, is found money. So there's all these things that you can make money off of that you previously haven't, and now they are. So whether that's tours of the shoe or whether that's repurposing parts of the shoe for a restaurant, creating more high booster impact seating like what they're doing in the South Stands with those seats down there, like they're having to find money. And Ross said something with us, and I know he kind of did the media rounds last week, but he talked about a $500 million athletic department. Buddy, you start asking questions about, like, well, he said something to us. He said, you know, like, they're always going to be renovating the shoe. Like, that's kind of the reality. They're always going to be renovating it. And that stuff starts to hit home. Like, there's a lot of things that need a lot of money there that they need to find some money for. And as long as they're also having to compensate players, you're kind of pulling from the same pot.
Well, and the thing is, where does it end? And what is going to be the boundaries? And right now, they're still trying to figure that out. And again, I wish they'd figure it out themselves. I mean, do we really want the federal government involved in college football? Who thinks that's a good idea?
They can't get it done either. Yeah, they can't get it done.
But I mean, the colleges, that's who they're leaning to, those guys? Come on. They need to figure it out. And unfortunately, it's like you and I talked. They should have got ahead of this so far long ago. And, you know, there's just so many things that are broken with it. I mean, when is the NFL going to start paying their fair share?
Never.
When are they going to pay for their farm system?
Never. They're never going
to. Well, they're going to have to eventually. I think you have to tell them. I don't know. Every other major sport has a farm system they pay for, right? What's bigger in this?
Hockey, major maybe, league baseball? Sort of. Hockey kind of has a baseball, minor league, hockey, but they have a college,
NBA.
NBA doesn't. Yeah,
I mean, it, at some point, you know, the NFL is, it's like Coach Coop used to say, we let these guys come in, they watch all our films, and then they take our best players after 3 years.
Yeah.
Although now guys can stay in school for 5 years, you know?
Yeah. What did you think about, I'll get you out of here on this, what did you think about moving Senior Day to the opener?
I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I know some people do. I just think everything's changing. I mean, the world's changing. The game has changed, and I don't have a problem with it. I think they're, you know, I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to, you know, just take that week, that last week, and make it all about that game, and that's it. And at the end of the day, that is the game you have to win. And all that other stuff that goes on, yeah, it's nice and, you know, Senior Day and all that stuff, it's great that they do that and whatever, but at the end of the day, you got to beat that team up north, and that's the most important thing.
Welcome back, buddy. Good talking to you.
See you, Bobo.
All right, see you, buddy. There he goes. Tuesdays with DeBerry on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We'll do a little thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Fan. Secret radio station. It's called The Fan 2. You can listen to the Bob and Tom Show, Jim Rome, and Buckeye stuff. Why do they pay me big money to whisper? The Fan 2 is on The Fan's HD2 channel and streaming on the Fan app. You're welcome.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
If you say something with enough confidence, it must be true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Tuesday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell's doing the world tour to promote the NFL's international games coming up this season. I think there's nine of them. In an interview with German broadcaster RTL, the NFL's commissioner says he believes, quote, at some point there will be an NFL team or teams outside the USA. I have no doubt that this will happen one day, end quote. Goodell also believes that international city or cities could eventually host a Super Bowl. Quote, there are definitely international cities that could host something like that, but we would like to see an NFL team in such a city first, end quote. Thing or not a thing.
Okay, so number one, as soon as you said German broadcaster RTL slash NTV, I thought of the Mike Myers skit on Saturday Night Live, Sprockets, and I imagine somebody like that interviewing Goodell, which just cracked me up. The second part of this is I think it's more likely that they have a Super Bowl overseas before they have a team overseas. I think it would be pretty easy to host a Super Bowl in London. I mean, hell, this is the NFL. They could do a Super Bowl in Dubai for the money. I mean, they would do that in a second, so that wouldn't surprise me. But, I mean, you could do it in London with a snap of the fingers. You could do it in about a dozen European cities could handle it. Certainly the big ones all could. So I think you'll see that first. I think the challenge on an international team over there, there's a million of them, let alone just logistics. London's probably the one that makes the most sense. That's a six-hour flight. But you really almost need two teams over there so that you could go over and almost stay for a week is probably how it would have to go. I think that one gets a little bit more convoluted. Now, if you want to define international cities as North American international cities, then I think you got a chance. I still think it's absolutely stupefying there's not a team in Toronto. That's pretty crazy to me. So you could see a team there at some point, and that would make all the sense in the world. But I think you're going to get a Super Bowl overseas in short order.
This is a thing because it's coming at some point. The NFL really wants this. I go back to the 90s when they did NFL Europe back then. And we've talked before about the NFL having a partnership with the UFL as like a minor league system or to get guys more reps. Why not, if you want to do this, why not do that? Put 4, 6, 8 teams over in Europe. And they can be your guys, like where your practice squad players go, or your, what is it they have? They have like that futures deal or whatever, guys like that. I don't think they can just put one team overseas. I think they have to put a whole division over there if they want to. They're going to have to put 4 teams over there. And that way teams can go over and play 2 games for the week or whatever. Then they can have their division games and all of that. I think it's the only way it works is if you go a whole NFL Europe division over there. But I think just make it like a minor league.
Would you like to touch my monkey?
There it is. Sprockets was great. It's very, very good.
League's going to do 9 international games this season. And then 10, or as many of as 10, starting in 2027. The league also voted earlier this year to strip teams' ability to protect any home games from international play away. So, great. Former Buckeye and New York Giants rookie linebacker Arvell Reese was asked if he made any major purchases after signing his rookie deal.
What was it like to sign your first contract?
It felt good.
Did you do anything special?
No, I just signed it then. Went to the hotel and then just got ready for practice the next day.
A lot of guys do like a first purchase kind of deal. Is anything you did special? Or you?
I ain't really got nothing to buy right now. I already got everything. I got a car and apartment, so I'm good right now.
Thing or not a thing.
Smart man right there. Very smart man. The other thing, and I've talked to NFL teams about this at the combine and even talking with folks at the Browns about this, like these guys come in, especially first round picks, they come in, they're already millionaires in a lot of instances. Like they have made money in NIL. I would also tell you this about Arvell Reese. I don't think he's anyone who asked for anything extra at Ohio State ever. I think he just said, I'm good. I'm going to ball out. Yes, sir. May I have another? Watch me dominate. And the rest of it all fell into place. So he's kind of the model of what you would want in this era of college football. Somebody who was identified young, developed in an expert level at Ohio State under Three's watchful eye, trusted in that process entirely, and then it paid off as big a way as possible. Arvell Reese, really, really smart dude.
I couldn't help but, was it Peter Schrager we played the audio from last week?
Yeah.
Talking about Arvell Reese, and he said he looked like RoboCop, but he also said he doesn't say anything. He just comes in, he goes to work, he gets done with practice, he goes to the weight room, he's in his playbook. I just couldn't help but think of that when you did this, and when we hear this, and I don't know Arvell Reese's background growing up.
Yeah.
I know he went to Glenville, and I know a lot of kids that go to Glenville don't have a lot outside of sports. I don't know if that was his background or not, but this just seems like a guy that was raised really well and doesn't need a lot. Just like appreciates what he has. He says, I got a car. I got an apartment. I'm good. Now I'm just going to go wreck quarterbacks in the NFC East.
Wasn't it Marshawn Lynch who didn't spend any of the money that he made on salary? And only spent the money he made on endorsements.
I know Rob Gronkowski did that.
He did that too.
Never spent a paycheck, just the endorsement money.
Just endorsement money, yeah.
Baker found this one from Darren Rovell. A hockey fan bought a 2024-2025 Upper Deck box of hockey trading cards for $440. And he pulled a one-of-one Macklin Celebrini. He got a $426,000 bounty on that card, turned it down, and over the weekend became the second highest hockey card to sell at auction for $1.28 million. Thing or not a thing.
So a $440 box tells you all you need to know. So NBC dabbles in this market, like not this market, but he dabbles in his card business, of which I provide most of the inventory for. And I'm stupefied at the amount that some of these boxes of cards are going for. So this is one where obviously this was the card you were looking for, was the 101 Celebrini, because it hadn't been opened yet. You knew it was out there in an unopened box somewhere. And that's where this number comes to at $450 a box to be able to buy the cards. So my hunch is the bounty was $426. He probably got it graded, which is the next step in this thing. Once he got it graded, then you get the 1.28. Now, the risk of getting it graded is it doesn't come back in the shape that you want it to come back in or something like that. So that leads to it. That's my hunch on how this went. Although in a one-on-one, maybe it doesn't matter at all. Either way, very good job out of him. I have no belief at all that this Macklin Celebrini card 5 years from now will be worth $1.28 million. I think it's going to be worth about $200. Maybe not quite that low, but not. We are in a boom of this business right now that is hard to even wrap your head around when you think about the scarcity. I just have a hard time believing it's going to maintain all this value.
I know we've talked about these kind of things a couple times in the past few months, and we talked about the Cooper Flag one of one, like the jersey patch card that somebody got recently.
Yep.
Good job out of this person, though, to not take the $426,000 right away, because I guess that means he put a little faith into Macklin Celebrini, and Macklin Celebrini having that huge second year that he did, I'm sure helped the value of this over double and go up to $1.28 million. I can't ever imagine spending, like, I can't imagine spending $440 on a box of cards. Like I told you, I remember my buddy had three boxes of 1989 Upper Deck cards just hoping to get a Ken Griffey Jr. Rookie card. I don't know if those boxes have ever been opened or not.
Yeah.
But it's just crazy to me to spend that much on something that could go away in a moment's notice.
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting how they've created the scarcity. I always tell NBC on almost all of this stuff, sell it. Sell them as much as you can. Sell them for whatever you can get them for.
But I don't know. We'll see. I just don't trust that this market's going to hold out.
Just don't let mom throw your box of cards away.
No. No. And that's why none of ours are worth anything, because none of us did. Two-a-days coming up next. We close out the NFC West. We'll do the Niners. We will do the Seahawks. Final hour of the program up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. For the ninth time all time, Ohio State football is number one in the Associated Press preseason top 25 poll. Buckeyes got 40 of the 69 first-place votes to take the top spot for the first time since 2015. Oregon Ducks got 14 first-place votes. They'll begin the year number two, followed by Georgia, Notre Dame, Texas, and number six, Indiana. First time in 65 years, the Big Ten is going to begin the season one and two. Buckeyes will host Oregon November 7th. They're 18 days out from their season opener, Saturday, September 5th against Ball State. Texas Longhorns got a massive scare Monday. Left tackle Trevor Goosby injured his knee at practice. The 6'7", 320-pound senior set to get an MRI today. Texas is going to host Ohio State in 25 days. In the NFL, free agent pass rusher Za'Darius Smith is signing a one-year deal with the Falcons. Browns were interested in a reunion with a 33-year-old Smith. This update sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Locally inspired dishes and award-winning cocktails. Visit highbankco.com and make your reservation today.
Men are working on everything except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a Tuesday. We are into two-a-days. We close out the NFC West. Hit it, fellas.
Bishop and Friends present two-a-days, our professional preseason preview of all 32 teams. Will your favorite team win it all this season? Doubt it.
NFC West, we close it out. The Rams, we did yesterday, clearly a Super Bowl contender. Cardinals, clearly not a Super Bowl contender, but did get the feeling that the expert we had on yesterday thought maybe the Cardinals would be a little bit better than I think they will be. They are a nice landing spot if you get over the ownership and the rest of it. They do have some talent there. These two teams we're doing today, these are ready to go. These are both ready to go. They do have some questions. They do have some losses. We'll start with the San Francisco 49ers. The only thing the San Francisco 49ers are missing in the Kyle Shanahan era is a Super Bowl win. That's it. They get everything else. They've been consistently good almost entirely during the run. Even when they have a miss like they did with Trey Lance a couple of years ago, it all works itself out as they land Brock Purdy. It's a team that's gotten a little bit older. They've got some depth issues here and there, but their core remains. I love some of their additions. They went 12-5 a year ago. They got hammered in the divisional round to Seattle, and maybe that's the biggest issue with the Niners. They got passed by two teams in their division who they've seen win the Super Bowl. They've been consistently better probably over the last decade than either Seattle or the Rams, but both of those teams have won Super Bowls and the 49ers have not. Their number one addition this year is Mike Evans on the outside. After playing an entire career in Tampa Bay, he comes in to help in the receiving core. They bring back Debo Samuel as well. We'll see how much he has left in the tank. One thing we know about Debo is Kyle knows how to use him. They do have a couple of losses here or there, but by and large, this team is one that you just respect the heck out of. It's just been a winning brand for the longest time, various incarnations of their ownership groups. But this group that's kind of the fulcrum of it has been the defensive stalwarts that have been there, George Kittle, Trent Williams, Christian McCaffrey, like just bank it. They're going to win double-digit games, and this year feels like that's going to be the case as well. A couple of new faces on the defensive side of the ball, but if they can get Nick Bosa back to playing at a level that he played at, remember Fred Warner missed a lot of time last year as well. He's back. This feels like a team that can go in a division that's got a bunch of teams that can go, but I'm not doubting Kyle Shanahan. I'm not doubting John Lynch and the way they build rosters. I'd just be silly to do so.
Yeah, the Niners have a Week 8 bye, the seventh easiest, most navigable schedule in the NFL. It does feel when they come out of that Week 8 bye at the Raiders. The bye is sandwiched between the Falcons and the Raiders. So this for San Francisco feels like make it through the regular season. 12-13 wins, try to get the number one seed in the NFC and then make that push. Because this team is ready to go.
Yeah, they
just have to make the push to the NFC Championship game, and that's something that if they can manage to stay healthy and that's
been the biggest thing, Reese.
The 41-7 thing is just so stupefying for last year. 41-6, I should say. But then I think
John Lynch and company, they took the right steps to figure out, all right, what do we need? Well, we need to get over that hump. And again, older players. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
The San Francisco 49ers, it seems like for the better part of the past decade, maybe a little longer, have been a team you're like, go win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You mentioned John Lynch. I don't know if he gets enough credit for doing what he does here. I love the addition of Mike Evans. Mm-hmm. I can't believe Tampa let him go. I mean, I know they still have Godwin and they've got Mac down there, but Mike Evans has been...
I don't think he wanted to play there anymore.
And then that could be. Maybe that's so.
Out. Yeah.
But, I mean, Mike Evans... Would Johnny Manziel be what Johnny Manziel was without him?
No.
He definitely wouldn't. So I love that addition. They have a major issue, though, on this roster with getting older. And as you guys talked about, the health. Mike Evans has been hurt a little bit. Debo Samuel is a guy that's been hurt. Christian Kirk, it seems like his whole career has been hurt. Yeah. Christian McCaffrey. And what's going on with him right now? Is he really got tightness, or does he want to get paid like the rest of the running backs have here? So what's going on with him? Trent Williams, George Kittle,
yeah,
Nick Bosa, just a lot of guys mm-hmm. that have been hurt here, and that may be the biggest question for them is health and age right now.
Oh, I think it 100% is big. It's just, can they stay healthy? And that's why it feels like, and then there's this weird thing with Kyle with the car accident that he got into and kind of the cover-up of that, and he's away, and so what does all of that look like? So there's a little bit of uneasiness, but in terms of consistently, this has consistently been one of the best teams in the NFL, and they just, for whatever reason, they haven't been able to get over the hump. And for Kyle, it goes back all the way to Atlanta, up 28-3 as the offensive coordinator. So he's been knocking on this door of a Super Bowl contender for... man, a dozen years or so. And I don't know if this is the team to do it. I don't think this is the best Niners team I've seen in the last 5 or 6 years. But if everything goes their way and they stay healthy, then nothing would surprise me if they were there in the end. Let's hit the categories on the Niners. Let's start with coach grade on Kyle Shanahan. Reese?
I think it's a B+. I think he's a really good football coach. I think they are, again, that 41-6 loss to the Seahawks, just stupefying. They were down 17-0 after the first quarter.
Yeah.
And so I think he's always going to kind of be stung by that 28-3 bug until he's able to get over it. And with how weird things have begun the season already with him. And like you mentioned, the car accident and how the mm-hmm. reporting was or really was not on that until it finally came out. It just feels weird. He feels like a really good football coach, but just not able to get his team that one step further that it needs to go, especially with the talent that they've accumulated over the last 5 seasons.
Yeah, I'm way lower, I believe, on Kyle Shanahan than most. I have this as a B because I still believe he's a good head coach and a good football mind. And he's probably, I would say he's definitely in the top 10 right now of football coaches. But there's been so many stupefying weird things mm-hmm. with him over the years. And so many times when... they probably were the best roster, and they just didn't get it done. So I'm not a full-on believer in Kyle Shanahan when some people are like, oh, he's the best mind in football. He's got to be, you know, a top-three coach. I don't think he's there.
I think he's the best play caller in the NFL. Play caller. I think he gets the most out of the talent that he has offensively more than anybody else. I think it almost doesn't matter who the running back is, doesn't matter who the quarterback is. He'll make it work. I think that there are failures in game that are very real. So I think B+, A- is probably where I was going to go with, but I think as a play caller, he's probably the best. Uniform grade on the Niners, Reese?
I think it's an A-. I think that I'm not ready to put it at A because I don't love it. It's just one of the more classic uniforms in the league. I think it's good. It's really good.
I think it's an A, and I think if they would wear like the 1990s Joe Montana, Steve Young era 49ers jerseys, it would be an A+.
They pretty much do.
Yeah, they're almost back to
they're
it.
Pretty, they got pretty
throwbacks,
much.
All two, like an alternate white throwback and then the red top look very, very good.
Those are the 75th anniversary, the one with the drop shadow. They wore those in the 75th anniversary.
Yeah, I'm out on
drop
those.
Numbers. Those are the ones they wore when they won the Super Bowl in 94. That was just for the 1 year off. I think they're an A. I think they're really close to an A+. I think these just, to me, and part of it's from when I grew up, when I just see these uniforms, I just think excellence. Because they won a lot when I was a kid. They won everything, it felt like. So, and I think the color scheme is great. I think it fits everything San Francisco is. I'm going to give them an A as well. One franchise great that you could take off of their history and put him active on this team. What's your answer, Reese?
I want to say Jerry Rice, but I'm going to go Patrick Willis.
I think Brock...
They get a lot of right answers.
I think Brock Purdy is an okay quarterback. Joe Montana is a great one.
Joe Montana is the most hopeless I was as a kid watching somebody else play quarterback if I was rooting against him. I just felt like if he had the ball, it was over. Now, I don't know if that was the case, but in my head, I also think he would thrive in this offense. I think Steve Young would, too, quite honestly. I think Steve Young would have a field day playing in Kyle Shanahan's offense, and his ability on his feet would be pretty big. Either one of those guys, to be different from Bake, I'll go Steve Young, but those would be my first two as well on that. Franchise tier, S through F, S being the best, F being the worst, Reese.
I mean, it wasn't too long ago they were in the Super Bowl, so I think I'm going to put them S tier.
Yeah, there's just such a long history with them. I think it's definitely an S.
Yeah, I think it's a model franchise, despite a bunch of different ownerships and different stadiums and everything
Santa
else.
Santa Clara or San Jose or not San Francisco.
Definitely not San Francisco, but yeah, it probably is an S-tier franchise. They've just won consistently my whole life. Finally, win it all, playoff building or busting, Reese.
I think they're done just being a playoff team. It feels like they should go for it. They should win it all.
Yeah, win it all is what they should be.
Yeah, I think that they probably believe that, too. I think it's a playoff team. I don't know that they have... They just have so many... It's such a game of roulette with all of their older guys in the injury thing. Like, can they survive all of that? So, to me, they feel like a playoff team that comes up short of the ultimate prize. We'll hit the Seahawks, the defending Super Bowl champions, coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on
Tonight. How many men signed the Declaration of Independence?
5.
I'll go 6.
I mean, if you add 50, you're correct. It's 56.
Really?
Rothman and Ice. Weekdays at noon.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus.
The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We have a rain-free afternoon ahead of us. That's a nice thing to hear. Less humid, mostly sunny skies, highs around 81. Overnight, mostly clear skies, lows of 64. Clouds will gradually increase once again for your Wednesday. There's a chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms developing, mainly later in the day, with highs around 80. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The show that understands the importance of a situational beverage. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
And homes in Columbus know that August brings those aggressive yellow jackets and wasps. You've seen them around. Heck, NBC got bit just the other day. It happens, kids. Don't wait for the invasion. Protect your property and your family with Rose Pest Solutions Home Service Program. Rose Home Service Program provides year-round protection, one flat annual fee, regularly scheduled visits. Rose is local, family-owned, trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for over 165 years. Get peace of mind today, 800-966-ROSE, or visit rosepestsolutions.com for more. Two-a-days continues in the NFC West, and we continue with the defending Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks. Last year when we were doing this, can you imagine if I would have told you guys that a year from now we would be talking about the defending Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks?
60-1 odds.
Yeah, that last part's a no.
60-1? Is that what they were? 60-1.
Yep, to start the season.
Unbelievable. Mike McDonald, his first year as a head coach, and he goes all the way. 14-3 on the season. They won the Super Bowl 29-13 over New England in a game that was never really close. They did so on the arm of Sam Darnold, who they got for, in quarterback terms, a bucket of balls. 3 years, $100 million is the deal on Darnold. He is great. Ends up being a spectacular player all year from them. They do it with on the back of a running running game that was very strong, on the offensive player of the year in Jackson Smith and Jigba, and on a defense that Mike McDonald had absolutely humming. They won two classic games against the Rams. Those were, I think, in retrospect, the two best teams in football last year. It's possible that they'll be the two best teams in football this year. They did lose Super Bowl MVP Kenneth Walker. He is now in Kansas City and will be playing for the Chiefs, but they did draft Jadarian Price out of Notre Dame. He was the other back at Notre Dame. They drafted him, so he goes into the fold on the Seattle team. The Seahawks are an interesting franchise. When I was a kid, I had always had relatives that lived in Seattle. Seahawks were Largent, Dave Craig, and uniforms, honestly, that look great now, but I did not think were cool at the time. And I don't know that anybody did, but they look great now. But they were not really a serious operation. The Seahawks, in fact, were an AFC team and then switched over to the NFC, and nobody even really noticed. But Paul Allen, who has since passed, and the ownership of this team is now in hands other than the Allen family's hands, Paul Allen legitimized this franchise in the biggest way possible. They got him a Super Bowl appearance early. They get one Super Bowl win with the Legion of Boom, probably should have won a second, and then they get a second Super Bowl championship with the win last season. When you look at their roster, it just comes into it. Do you believe that they can run it back? And it's very difficult to do in the NFL these days to try to run it back, but from a roster standpoint, they kind of have everything that you really need. It's just a matter of, do you believe that Darnold can do it again? And I would just say, in regard to Sam Darnold, don't doubt him anymore. He's done it 2 years in a row and taken a team. He had Minnesota at 13-3 and had these guys 14-3 and Super Bowl champions last year. When you look at the depth chart, you look at the roster, nothing here that's too alarmist. They look like a team that's ready to go and ready to go to defend their championship. It's hard to do, but it looks like a team that certainly is up to the challenge of being able to give it a go.
Yeah, an extra year with Sam Darnold and Jackson Smith and Jigba is going to be, I think, a lot of fun to watch, to see how that grows, especially now with more being asked of him with the departure of Kenneth Walker. This is going to be a daunting schedule that Seattle's got, a week 11 bye, but a lot of fun if you're just an NFL fan. You're looking Rams 16, week 16 and 17, so they don't see Los Angeles till the back half of their season, but they open September 9th against the New England Patriots. That'll be awesome. Mm-hmm. And then in that same first block of the season, Chargers, Niners, Broncos, Chiefs, and then they go into the bye week against the Las Vegas Raiders. So this is a team that you right now can say, I could see them 12-5, or yeah, I could see them 13-4. You could also see them 10-7 and getting with a wild card, because this is the ask. You win the Super Bowl, and then the schedule makers don't do any favors, but they're in such a prime spot, and not having lost a ton from last year. I think it's the dark side is what their defense is calling themselves. Like, this is a team full of confidence that had a major question at quarterback that I said, all right, yeah, he did it in Minnesota. Do it in Seattle, and he did it in Seattle. So I have no reason to doubt this team this season.
And it looks like no new faces defensively. Pretty much everybody
same
back.
Brick. Yeah.
I don't know if I've seen that in the free agency era, where a team that wins the Super Bowl brings almost everyone back. I think the only starters from last year they are losing are Kenneth Walker, who, and I think that's a huge loss.
Yeah.
And Kobe Bryant. I think it was like their starting nickelback last year, and he's gone. Yeah. But other than that, everybody is back on this team, and most of the two deep is back on this team. There's not a lot of change there. So, Reese, you say, yeah, I could see them going 10-7. I'll tell you what, I don't see them going 10-7. I don't know how that's possible with bringing this team back in this continuity. I don't think the NFL did them or the Rams any favors scheduling those games so close to the playoffs in week 16 and week 18. I think that sucks for both of those teams, and I hope it doesn't affect them going into the playoffs, playing games like that that not only matter so much, but against a division opponent and one of the other better teams in the league. So, you know, it's going to be just a little more physical than most games. But if Zach Charbonnet can stay healthy, and or Jadarian Price is a guy, I don't see how this team isn't the favorite in the NFC, even with everything the Rams have done.
Yeah, I mean, it's these two. I mean, these are the two that you look at and you say, well, that's, you give me these two or the field in the NFC, you're going to take these two.
Still lean Los Angeles, but
Me too. I think I do too. But at the same time, like, good grief. Like, when you look at the Seahawks operation, what are we downing them for? They just did it. It's just, can you do it again? And they're really lovable on Hard Knocks. I've enjoyed the first couple of episodes of Hard Knocks with these guys too. So they're a likable team. There's a lot to like here. Let's hit the categories on the Seattle Seahawks. We kick it off with coach grade for Mike McDonald. Pretty good debut.
Yeah, I think 10-7 in year one, and then the Super Bowl in year two. It's an A+.
Incredible job.
I would not have guessed this when they hired Mike McDonald, but it's an A+.
Yeah, he crushed it. Crushed it right away. And if you watch Hard Knocks, you see why, how he controls the room, how he has complete control of the operation. It's a hit across the board. He absolutely crushed it. It's an A+. You have to be at this point. He's probably the defensive equivalent of McVay at this point, is kind of the way you kind of got to view him. Uniform grade on the Seahawks, Reese?
I'm going to give it an A. I love everything but their green highlighter alternates, and they have the best, in my opinion, throwback in the league.
Yeah.
So I'm giving them a B here. I think their new uniforms are just fine. Like you said, when they do that green, I think it's gross. That's probably an F. But when they do the throwback, it's an A+. And Bo, you talked about growing up, maybe you didn't like it. I always kind of liked the Seahawks uniforms.
Yeah.
I thought the blue and the green worked. I know we've talked about this before. Uniforms now are different. I don't know if it's the TV, I don't know if it's the material, but the colors pop more. The blue and the green on the Seattle uniforms now pop more than they used to, just like the orange and the blue on those throwback Broncos uniforms. It's just different. They look different. They look so cool.
So I think what it is for the longest time, Nike wanted uniformity. So if you were Navy, you were only one Navy. And now I think what the throwback show is, there's all these variety and shades of colors that we don't get to use anymore. Because we now, it's one royal, one navy, one light blue, and there's all these different shades that can be used. And I think that, in condition with the HDTV, is why they're popping. But it's, they do. I think it's B. I think their throwback's an A. I think that they're, actually might be an A- across the board, honestly. Like, even their, I think their new ones are cool. They're one of the few that did, like, a new uniform that, to me, actually works. I think it looks like the Legion of Boom to me. Like, I think they did a really good job with it. I think they kind of hit on all fronts with their uniforms. I'll go B+ on that. One franchise great that you could add to this team, Reese.
I mean, if I could just add the Legion of Boom, I think would be a win. But Marshawn Lynch was so damn fun.
Mm-hmm.
Running with Beast Mode and the Beast Quake. I think it'd be Marshawn.
So it's very hard for me not to go Walter Jones here. He was probably the best tackle in the league for quite some time.
Yep.
Although the one question mark I have about this team is the running back room. So, Reese, I think your answer of Marshawn Lynch is right.
All right. I just want to get this right statistically because I think we're all going in the same direction. But I'm just going to go with a different running back. And, of course, Pro Football Reference is doing this ridiculous thing where you have to verify that you're a human to be able to do it. I'm going to go with 2005 NFL MVP Sean Alexander.
That's a good one.
Who in 2005 rushed for 1,880 and 27 touchdowns. Here's Sean Alexander, five consecutive seasons. 13-18, 11-75, 14-35, 16-96, and 1,880. That's getting it done in a big, big way. Franchise tier, S through F. What do you got on the Seahawks?
It's an S tier.
Yeah, it's an S tier. As high as it can be.
I'm going to go A because new ownership. Got to see how this plays out with the new ownership thing. I think in the last 20 years they've been an S tier. But I'm going to go A tier just until I see it from the new ownership. Win it all, playoffs, building or busting for Seattle, Reese.
This team, the expectation, win it all. They've kept the team to win it all. Yeah, this outside of the Rams, they're my second favorite.
Yeah, it's a win it all.
Yep. Yep. No holes, no notes. Go win it all. Try to repeat something that it's a tall order to be able to do it. We'll see if they can pull it off. Robert Turbin won a Super Bowl with the Seahawks in the Super Bowl 48. He will join us in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by KDHVAC, doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable. The Fan.
the best hair on the air.
You are listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, let's get some perspective on the Seattle Seahawks, the defending Super Bowl champions in the NFC West, from a man who ought to know. Won a Super Bowl with the Seahawks, Super Bowl 48 champion, former NFL back Robert Turbin joins us. Locked On Seahawks is where you can find him. Robert, thank you so much for taking the time. Before we get into this team and what you saw last year, what is it about, we were talking about these franchises in the NFC West and how great certainly the three of them at the top are, absolutely. What is it about Seattle and the culture there that you were a part of that even though they've had different ownership, different coaches, it feels like there's a standard that they continue to maintain?
Well, I think a lot of the credit goes to really the people of Seattle. I mean, I've been around the community a long time. I'm still very much so involved. And everybody is, you know, it's a community that is, you know, really focused on, you know, how can I help? How can I lend a helping hand? Whether you're a player, whether you're retired, whether you're in a different industry, it's one of the rare communities. I mean, I've played for other teams and I've mm-hmm. lived in different places. And, you know, Seattle just has a special way about going about things. And the teams are like that as well. And so I think that's why you're able to sustain success, because everybody, there's no ego in Seattle. Everybody is collectively wanting the same things and wanting to see everybody win.
What was it about Mike McDonald when he got there, if anything, that led you to believe that they landed the right guy to lead this franchise?
Well, he's had success in Baltimore. You know, he's young and innovative. And, you know, when you think about the NFC West, you think about a lot of high-powered offense. The Cardinals were like that once upon a time. But certainly, you know, the Seahawks, after a while, just couldn't get over the hump of, you know, taking down the 49ers. You know, and the Rams. And so, you know, we had to find a way to combat that. And, you know, Mike McDonald was a great choice for that. You know, you think about what he was able to do in Baltimore. And then when he left Baltimore, you could tell the defense wasn't as good. And so he just brought, you know, an innovative mind and a different way of thinking, per se, a perspective that was different, obviously, from Pete Carroll. And it's worked out well for him.
Did you believe in Darnold when they signed him?
Not totally. No, mm-hmm. I didn't. I thought he'd be a good quarterback, but, you know, he certainly has, you know, developed into obviously a Super Bowl champion. And, you know, I got to give a lot of credit to Coach Mike McDonald for that and the discipline that, you know, he's kind of put around the team, and obviously Sam Darnold for the work that he's put in.
Robert, what can you tell me about Sam, the person, having been around him a little bit, as you have been, I'm assuming, over the last year, probably quite a bit? What can you tell me about him as a person that can have the audience understand how somebody could kind of go through everything he went through and all of the doubting and come out of it on the other side?
Well, he's just a super humble guy. And yeah. His mindset, I thought, was interesting through everything that he was going through in his career. You know, he was focused on the fact that he was still in the league, mm-hmm. regardless of whether he was a starter or third string or practice squad. You know, he felt very fortunate that, you know, he still was on a team. You know, he still had the name on the back of his jersey. And so his focus was just, I'm just going to take the best advantage of that as I can and try to soak up as much knowledge over the course of this journey as I can, and the chips are going to fall where they may. A lot of players, you know, the ego kicks in. I'm a first overall pick or first rounder, and I deserve this, and I should be doing that. And our confidence wavers. You know, that's human nature. But Sam, he focused on, you know, really just the gratitude of still being in the NFL. And I think that's what's carried him to now be in this spot.
You got a guy that we knew pretty well around here who just exploded last year, 119 for 1793 and 10 touchdowns. We saw glimpses of that when he was in Scarlet and Gray around here, and I think he came on in that first year and then exploded last year. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, your front row seat to him really arriving in the biggest possible way. What was it like watching last season as they relied on him the way that they did and he continued to deliver the way that he did?
Well, it was really special, and you know, it's kind of interesting how Seattle was able to naturally groom him, you know, because when he first came into the league, he was third you know, to Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, who were two pretty good wide receivers in their own respect, you know, especially when they were playing with Russell Wilson at quarterback. Mm-hmm. And you could just see how he was able to soak up so much knowledge and, you know, how both of those guys in a lot of ways took Jackson Smith and Jigba under their wing, especially Tyler Lockett. And he's blossomed into, you know, one of the top, you know, one, two or three wide receivers, you know, in the league. And so for him to not have to have the pressure of being number one right away, learn how to do it and then develop into it, I think has been a great journey for his career. And he's got obviously a long way to go.
Absolutely, he does. We're talking to Robert Turbin, Super Bowl 48 champion with Seattle. You can find him Locked On Seahawks. Okay, I don't recall this. You've been around the league a long time. A Super Bowl champion that is returning this many starters and two deep, Robert. Obviously, Kenneth Walker goes, Kobe goes as well. But other than that, it's kind of like everybody else is back for one more run at this thing at least. Do you recall this in your time around the league? You've been around it a long time, where a Super Bowl champion returns so many guys?
I mean, our team was like that. We won a title after beating Denver. And, you know, that next season, it's rare. And we talked about it. You know, when we came back to the offseason program, obviously there were some new players in the building as there is every year. But in terms of the core and a lot of our two deep even around the roster, it was the same guy. You know, it was the same guy. So it is really special when you're able to navigate the salary cap in a way where you are able to keep, you know, most of your guys. And it helps when you're not paying the quarterback $50 million a year, which they're not doing with Sam Darnold. And so it really makes for a special opportunity this season for Seattle.
All right, Jadarian Price, can he fill those shoes? Obviously, Charbonnet is going to be in the middle of that as well. What have you seen from Price and Charbonnet trying to replace what Kenneth Walker brought last year?
Well, he's got much more development that needs to take place. You know, can he do it? Hypothetically, yes. He's a different player, obviously. Will he do it is a different question. A lot of us around Seattle, including myself, have a lot of belief in him. But you don't know until the bullets are firing on Sundays, and you got to be able to react on the fly, and you got to be able to adjust, you know, with blitz protection. Then, you know, you may come across a formation and to block the safety, but the tackle blocks them. And so now you got to jump back inside to take the linebacker because the tackle messed up on his assignment or whatever. So those things, that's at full speed. You don't have time to talk about it later, and you're certainly not going to blame each other after the fact. You're not going to point fingers, okay, because that's not what good teams do. And so until those situations, you know, start to happen out there on Sundays, then we'll know. But in terms of how he's looked at training camp, he's looked amazing when healthy.
Robert, if you could pass a bit of advice to this group of Seahawks from your group in terms of repeating, what is something they don't realize about repeating that you guys who live through it and know how hard it is could pass on? What advice would you give?
Well, you got to ignore the outside noise. You know, last year there was no noise because nobody really thought the Seahawks would be, you know, legitimate contenders like that. Mm-hmm. And it's easy. It's easy to prove people wrong. When we won the title in 2013, it was like that for us. You know, we just kind of came out of nowhere in some ways. And so now, even though the Seahawks are being, I think, a little underrated still, you know, they are in a position where they're the champs. And so you got a bullseye on your back. So you got to ignore the outside noise, and you got to be able to keep each other accountable. A couple guys got paid this offseason. Jackson Smith and Jabba got paid. Devin Witherspoon got paid. You got to check your ego at the door, you know, when you show up to the facility, you know, every morning to get ready for these games week to week to week. And so that same mindset that you had last year where you were trying to prove yourselves sort of needs to be reinvented this season as well and try to prove it again.
Robert, I'll get you out of here on this one. Greatly appreciate your time. What is your pecking order in the NFC West going into the season? How do you kind of see those four teams stacked?
Seahawks, Rams, Niners, Cardinals. Yeah. Oh, I got it right now. Yep. Yeah.
Three playoff teams?
No, I think the Niners. I think there's a significant chance the Niners actually take a step back this season, and it's because that you know, for me, it's concerning that their core players are aging and returning from injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually not a good formula to winning.
No. Man, this was a treat. Thank you so much for your time. Grateful you gave us a little bit of it today. Thanks, pal.
No problem.
All right, there he goes. Robert Turbin, Super Bowl champion with Seattle back in Super Bowl 48, and you can catch him locked on Seahawks for all of your Seahawks conversation. Yeah, Rams, Seahawks, ready to go. Both of those two teams absolutely loaded for bear. Get you three things on a Tuesday up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Seat Football.
Training camp report.
This report is brought to you statewide by Safelite Auto Glass and Bob's Discount Furniture. As always, all eyes are on Ohio State's quarterback and Julian Sand, who's back for a second season as a starter. Hopes that his added dimensions can help his progress going into this year.
Yeah, I'm about 215 now, so a little bit heavier than last year. And, you know, it was very helpful in the offseason. You know, Coach Mick pushed me pretty hard, and I think the extra weight has helped me in, you know, throwing the ball and running the ball.
Sand also says just a year's experience could be a bonus.
Yeah, I think, you know, having the year of experience is definitely something that helps. And then, you know, just being able to kind of improve my physical traits the offseason helps.
And certainly Sand set some pretty lofty goals considering what he did last year, being a Heisman finalist. We'll have more after this.
Bob's Discount Furniture has the furniture you've waited 250 years for. We've got power reclining sofas as low as $7.99, five-piece dining sets as low as $3.99, Bob-O-Pedic mattresses for as low as $2.99, and of course, feature-packed bestsellers like my Playday sectional with pop-up sleeper sofa. So stop in or shop mybobs.com to see where America shops for furniture.
Oh, my Bob!
Bob's Discount Furniture, proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safelite Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at safelite.com. Safelite Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
As mentioned, all eyes on Julian Sand, the Ohio State quarterback, as he enters his second season as the starter. And one of the questions that Sand has been asked about more than once is how he and receiver Jeremiah Smith and head coach Ryan Day all get themselves working in unison, all operating on the same page.
Yeah, just, you know, how can we improve our timing and get, you know, on the same page on everything? And, you know, a lot of that work was done in the offseason. And then, you know, communication is the best thing for our offense. And, you know, how can we, you know, get to the point where we know what each other is thinking? And, you know, being able to take the points from Coach Day, you know, obviously an elite developer of quarterbacks and somebody who knows the pass game really well. I mean, is somebody who, you know, gives us great points. So me and Jeremiah always come together and kind of talk through whether it's a certain route or a certain coverage. What can we do to beat this?
And not just a second year as a starter, but his third year in a program when you consider his redshirt freshman year. Season opener September 5th for the Buckeyes against Ball State. We'll have another report coming up tomorrow. This is Paul Keels, and you're listening to the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
The new All-Pro to sale Buckeye Nation. Join us February 19th to February 26th, 2027, as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Buckeye Cruise for Cancer out of Barbados on the Silver Sea, Silver Ray. Meet more than 35 Buckeye greats plus some of your favorite current Buckeyes, all while making memories and helping beat cancer. You don't want to miss this ultimate Buckeye fan experience. We can't wait to see you on board. Let's celebrate 20 years of making a difference. Visit BuckeyeCruise.com for more information.
Paul Keels here, voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. You have to check out the brand new AAA Buckeyes MVP membership. Get all the benefits of AAA, such as 24/7 roadside assistance, plus chances to win tickets to Buckeye sporting events, access to exclusive MVP experiences, along with 10% off gear at the Ohio State Team Shop. Already a AAA member? Add the Buckeye MVP membership upgrade for free. Head to AAA.com/Buckeyes to join the squad and put your fandom in drive.
Get Eco.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
After putting up with Dom DeBerry for a decade, the broadcast gods gave Bo these two. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, Reese, what are you on the poll today?
A daily fan poll sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. It asks, how long until there's an NFL team outside of the United States? Your options are by 2030, within the next decade, more than 10 years from now, or never. 45% say within the next decade there'll be an NFL team outside of the United States. 20% say never. 22% say more than 10 years from now until it takes 10 years from now to an NFL team's outside the U.S. And by 2030 is getting 12% of respondents there.
I think if you could add Canada, because Toronto's, it's like an asterisk, is Toronto. The only thing I don't know is, you know, there was always, like, who would be the team to move to Toronto? And there, right now, there isn't anybody that's in any sort. Is there somebody I'm missing, Bake?
No, but that's what I was going to say, is how many teams do we want in the NFL?
No, I think they have enough.
Are we going to expand this to 40? Are we going to move? Like, who are we going to move?
Well, it's several billion dollars of an initiation fee. I mean, they're stocked that the NBA one is going to go for $5 billion. What does an NFL expansion franchise net you in Toronto? $11 billion? Like, I mean, in London, it might be 15. Like, and the owners all split that. So they'll find a way to add to it. But this is probably one of the few times where you look at it from there isn't an NFL team in a precarious stadium situation that would move.
I mean, probably a lot of people around here are going to be upset, but it'd probably be the Bengals, right?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, they're probably one who's due one. But, I don't think that's going to be in the offering. But yeah,
I mean, what franchise? I mean,
there isn't one.
I don't think the Bears are going to move. Like, if somebody bought the Bears.
It was always Buffalo, but they got a new stadium. So it was always like, would they take the Buffalo Bills and put them in Toronto? They used to play regular season games up there. Play a couple of year, like how Jacksonville. And then it was Jacksonville with London. But then now they're getting their stadium redone. So I might not be any. I think the answer to that's probably no, that we won't see it. Time for three things on a Tuesday. Hit it, guys.
One, two, three
things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, these will all be first day of school inspired, as today was the first day for the boys. My wife got up when I got up today. She's making a breakfast, little breakfast sandwiches, and everything's locked in, and we're ready for school, and everything's going. It's possible that my wife may have left me. I have not heard or not a text, not nothing since, I don't know, 8:15 in the morning when she took Bootsy to school. It's possible that she just walked off. Well, I got him to school. All the best. I'll see you on down the road. No idea where she is. It's very possible that she's had enough. She's either on a walk, having a glass of wine at lunch, both of which would be very much deserved, or she's just left me. All of those things are in play.
I mean, if that's the case, and I guess if you didn't have to do anything this afternoon, could you open or have a glass for yourself? Treat yourself. It's Tuesday.
It'd be a lot like Kurt Russell's character in Overboard. Like, I need to find a new one pretty quick because I can't do this by myself. I'll tell you that.
First thing for me, so we talked about that Macklin Celebrini car, the 101 that sold for $1.28 million.
Yeah.
The second most ever fetched for an NHL card. The most is $3.75 was the price of a 1970-1980 OPC Wayne Gretzky rookie with a PSA 10 as its grade. And I just wonder how in 1979 you were able to keep a card that pristine to when you sold it in 2021 as a PSA 10.
Crazy.
It had to be a Wayne Gretzky card, right? It couldn't have been anyone else, though. Speaking of hockey, the CBJ, we're still waiting to hear if and when Adam Fantilli gets signed. But they have announced who the new voice at Nationwide Arena is going to be. It's Josh Hunter. He was previously a PA announcer of the Colorado Avalanche and the MLS's Colorado Rapids. He was also the first ever PA announcer for the Seattle Kraken. So Josh Hunter will be the voice welcoming you to Nationwide Arena this year.
Welcome to town, Josh, and bring some of that winning with you because you've been around some winning operations. We could take some around here. Number two for me, so it used to be a big deal when the boys were little, like a first day of school outfit. Now their whole thing is minimalist. So, like, there's no thought to it anymore. They just put on something, and away they go. Like, that used to be a really big deal when I was a kid. It used to be. Now it's, like, nothing. Like, I don't even know if they wore new shoes. I don't even know if we bought them new shoes. It's hard to say. But there was none of that juice, which was a crazy departure from when they were little.
I saw that last week with some of my friends posting pictures of their kids back to school and, like, girls wearing a t-shirt that cover their shorts pretty much in Birkenstocks, and that's it.
That's right. That's the outfit. That's the uniform.
I guess if they're not coming to you with anything, you're good.
It's fine.
Right? You're
it's fine.
Free of that obligation. I've been lamenting recently the water that's been carried by Shams Charania for some NBA decision makers, and it looks like Jeannie Buss is saying that her brothers played him in regards to this sale of their Lakers percentage, because Shams was sort of breaking some news, or at least had upfront news about the Buss siblings. I think there's five of them total. Four of them wanted to sell, but Jeannie's the governor, or at least controls the family's decision making here. And I just you have to be careful in these situations if you're reporting stuff like that and really trying to I'll say it, carry water for NBA decision makers, because they got no love for you.
This is Succession. It's playing out. Like, this Lakers thing is, like, even the Mark Walter, like, who he owes money to, now he might sell as part of Chelsea. Yep. Like, there's a lot going on here.
Guys, my version of my Phil Steele high school football Bible is almost complete. I spent my whole day Saturday. All of the papers I've compiled, articles I've compiled, I sat there, I read them, I three-hole punched them, I put them in my inch-and-a-half binder in the order that I have so that I can find them on Friday nights. That was a long Saturday, sitting on my couch doing that.
Now, that is a good way to spend a day off as opposed to golfing with Thidoff. That's a great job out of you. Number three for me, Buddy Garrity doesn't know what to do. He's lost. The now four-year-old golden retriever. He's got no clue what to do. Like, where are his buddies? Where are these people? He's walking around aimlessly. He just lost. He's like the Pablo Escobar meme. That's what's going on with him right now. Just a lost dog.
Final thing for me is going to be a request. We had some in the YouTube chat earlier today about Ryan Baker's preseason high school football top 10. Is there a way we can get that in the show sometime tomorrow or Friday?
Yeah, we can.
Let's
get
do
it in
Friday.
There.
We'll do it Friday on the kickoff. We'll do a whole. I'll tell you what, kids. Your little advanced planning. 9:45 segment Friday. Your Central Ohio high school football preview.
All right, I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I read up on it Saturday, as you heard. Final thing for me, Rothman and Ice coming up next. Tyvis Powell, 1:30. Ian Fitzsimmons, 2:30.
You have that to look forward to, which is very, very nice. We're back tomorrow. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
Where can you listen to the number one ranked Ohio State Buckeyes? On Columbus's number one station. Your home of the Buckeyes, The Fan.